Welcome to the Port Forward Podcast, episode number 27, CPU Slow. In this exciting episode, we will cover Node.js, the tool of the week, which is the WebStorm IDE, which works great with a Node.js plugin for editing. Merrick also gives a rundown of some Node.js history. We will also get some pretty good rants from Mr. Sam about Windows 8. And we will also cover the most epic router, which is named the Dark Knight. But before we get started with the show, I would like to clip together, you know, around 10 minutes of a little bit of a pre-show, which is basically us warming up before we get the show started. And we all haven't seen each other, and it's pretty funny because we're all catching up. And I just wanted to play that with you, and then we will get the show started. Thank you.
All right. What's up, dudes?
All right. Wait, let me make sure my phone's on quiet. Everything about the Nexus 4 so far is cool, except for the back of it is lubed with goddamn pure silicone or something like that, because you can't set it on anything but a perfectly flat surface. The thing just fucking ice rinks off your lap, and it fucking pisses me off so much, because I was all getting my Node notes together and shit, and I set it on the arm of the couch, and it's just a bloop down the couch hole, and I'm like, fuck! Because it wasn't on quiet, and it was fucking, it's a fold-out couch, and it was like down in the gears and the springs and shit, and I fucking already scratched it once, and I was like raging, throwing the cushions off the couch and fucking trying to get ready, and you're like, we're podcasting in 10 minutes. I'm like, all right, cool, as it fucking falls in this black hole, and I was so mad.
Yeah, I got it out. Gears weren't moving.
That's oh, so God, awesome. It was so annoying. I didn't do any new, a little teeny bit of, there's a nick on the frame at the bottom, but anyway, that's my only complaint so far. Other than that, it's pretty sweet.
Nice. So, that's different. The Nexus 7, and then there's a new tablet. What is that called?
That's the small tablet. The large tablet is the Nexus 10, and then the 4, I've got the phone.
So is the Nexus 7 the size of an iPad mini or something?
Ish, yeah. I haven't seen them side by side. I haven't actually either played with either of them, but yeah, they're
I've only played with the Nexus 7.
Sector.
Vlad has one.
Sizes.
So that's really the only problem with it? Everything else is...
Oh, yeah. Well, other than little migration gripes, like I haven't moved all my contacts yet and I don't have my old text messages. Other than that, yeah. No, what's sweet about it is the larger screen. And, you know, with Android, you get the customization you could only dream of when you're on, you know, iOS native or unjailbroken iOS. So.
And, yeah, it's running vanilla Droid. It's not been passed through a carrier, so customization is much more effective in it.
Yeah. I'm using
that is perfect.
Google OS, where it's untainted by fucking Sprint or, you know, all the carrier software like Samsung, the Galaxy S3 has Samsung's version of Android and all the shit they put in there. So, anyway. So,
there's this old woman walking past my car, giving it this dirty looks. That's right. Keep it moving.
Right. There you go. Are podcasting right. From your car, you homeless bastard.
No, I'm just looking at it from the window. That's right.
Wait. I want to take a wild guess that you had to drive somewhere where there's internet, right? So, is that why or no?
Well, you know, it's sort of. That's not why, but it happened.
Sort of. I sort of had to drive under a bridge because I didn't want to get wet. But anyway.
You know how it goes. This is really okay. Sort of fancy neighborhood here, and so my car really doesn't fit in so well.
Oh, that's too bad.
Those dirty looks.
BMWs and stuff.
So, Sam, are you on the headset, iPhone 4 headset or whatever?
Yes.
Can you pull the... what's it called? The bead, the microphone away from your mouth because you're clipping a little bit. I don't know if you have a good place to hold it, but...
I can hold it. Is this better right here?
That's better. Or even just attach it to your shirt like a lapel and don't fuck with it. And then that'll be even be probably better, but whatever.
Then you can't move and shoot.
I'll just make sure to keep it not close.
No, like... then you can move, Merrick.
Not if it's rustling around and shit on your shirt. Well, yeah.
That's whatever. A lapel, douche.
I'll fucking douche you.
Do you want a fucking lapel, how a lapel works?
You're going to know what it is when they make you eat one.
I've only fucking filmed 2 YouTube videos wearing a lapel. How many YouTube videos have you filmed wearing a lapel, Mike?
Well, I don't do gay porn, so that's what you're talking about.
What?
Okay, on that note, let's not worry about it. We'll not have clipping, gay porn or otherwise.
Oh, man.
Or OpenGL or otherwise.
Did you guys, I haven't had a chance to listen to number 26, is that the last one? So, did you guys discuss Windows 8 yet?
No, we did
that's
not.
That's all you, buddy.
Okay. I would really like to cover that.
It sucks because it would have been perfect to have a conversation with Michael Dominic and you.
Oh, is that right? Why?
Because he is he's just made the decision to go develop on Windows 7 or Windows 8 platform.
Is he out of his fucking mind?
Okay, this is why it's comic fucking gold.
I'm sorry,
to God.
Sorry.
Well,
I wish he was like online, or like we could just conference him in just for this one topic.
Hey, it's okay. I'll get other developers in here. Fucking ask some questions.
No, he's the. I'm telling you, man. I want to see.
Oh, you know what? He may actually be the only fucking Windows 8 developer. You're right. So never mind. I should probably have hold it up. Talk to him.
Oh my god, that's so good. Okay, well, it'll happen. So yeah. we can talk about it all we want from your point of view, and then we can do what we want to do. So, are we all in the dock? No, Sam can't get in the dock. Awesome.
Yeah, maybe able to ghetto rig it or something.
Why can't he?
Because, you know, I don't have a computer in front of me because this is a computerless era.
Just catching up on
Steve Jobs foresaw.
Yeah, this is a computerless. The computer is dead. The PC is dead. The laptop is dead, obviously. It's all about iPhones.
Running a historical version of one of those, I suppose.
You're already recording everything, right, Benjamin?
Yeah, but we're not podcasting, though.
Well, you know, we may as well be podcasting right now.
We may as well just podcast right now.
Well, you actually might not appreciate how much I clip together of this show, but we do clip together clips that are not.
Oh yeah, no, I know. That's why they sound good. Instead of me just rambling on in ADD, like put that shit together.
Yeah, we trust Benjamin. We appreciate it. At least I do.
In Benjamin's, I trust.
That's so sweet. We announced podcast number 26, Sam. At the beginning, we open up. Hey, it's podcast number 25. That was a good move.
Oh no.
So
every podcast, that's all you have to jump and downloads.
Every podcast does that. Oh, it's a fatal error. So somehow we divided by zero, and the internet paid more attention to us.
Correct. People always pay attention to mistakes, dude. Like Windows 8. I mean, if it was just like an incremental release, and it was Windows 8, and it was exactly like Windows 7, but like, you know, a little bit better. Nobody really gave a shit.
Oh yeah, but there's a start bar.
There was a download spike. I mean, I don't know what your download spike came from, but my download spike for a real reason was I got an interview on another podcast.
Nice, dude.
Dude, I know. It's money. I don't know if I've shown that to either of you guys, but... Well, Merrick knows, but yeah.
No, you were just hoarding all of the attention to yourself and Merrick. Left me out of it. That's fine. Really.
Well, Merrick wasn't there. It was just me. I mean, as far as the attention of the listeners, but...
Nice.
Wait, so how many listeners?
Okay, so I was on Michael Dominic's podcast, right?
Yeah, his podcast has how many listeners? Oh shit, I had no clue.
Yeah, he actually has a real network. Yeah.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Pretty sweet.
So hopefully that happened. And I went on his show, and then after he podcasted on our show, Merrick, the next day after we podcasted with Michael Dominic, he gave us a mention on the air, so
nice.
It wasn't very strong, it was like go do this, but
yeah.
Yeah.
Still pretty sweet.
Welcome to the Port Forward Podcast. We'll be right back.
Welcome to Port Forward Podcast, episode number 27. Today is January 12th, 2013. I've got Sam, I've got Merrick. What's up, Merrick?
What's up?
What's up, Sam?
What's going on?
All right. So, all three podcasters back on virtually normal terms for the majority of this podcast.
Yeah, it's been a while, hasn't it?
It's been a while since we've all gone back to the original format.
This is a real family reunion.
And I would like to say, if you guys are new to the show, as you may be, please listen to episodes 20 and before, somewhere between episodes 3 and number 20, because you will enjoy those shows. A lot of those are the normal format. So, good times. We actually, Merrick, the distance between this podcast and the last is actually very short, dude. We podcasted after a short amount of time.
This might
be
a record as far as how soon we've podcasted.
The last podcast was on the 5th, so that was last Saturday, dude.
Yeah,
that's a hardcore.
You're a busy guy.
Week.
I'm a busy guy, but we got a sweet shout out from Michael Dominic, and we want to anybody who's interested in our podcast, we don't want to let them down, so we're gonna start knocking them out. Hopefully, here.
Exactly. Now something happened in the Port Forward Podcast history. I'd like all of you guys to go to portforwardpodcast.com. Of those of you that can, Merrick specifically,
with a internet connection and a computer near. Oh, you're talking to us, not like the three listeners.
Correct.
Oh, gotcha. All right, I'm going there right now.
So if you go there, just let me know when you load this bad mamma jamma.
Sweet, coming up on the way. Portforwarding.com? What? Chrome history?
Podcast.
I swear to God.
Oh, yeah. Why? Why doesn't Chrome history know what you want?
That is retarded.
This is epic pod here, guys. We're doing some great podcasting here. Waiting for Merrick to load this webpage.
All right, we got it up. Show 26, Whisper Tap.
All right, so the site looks a little bit different. You might have noticed we've gotten a site redesign. We never talked about this on the podcast, and that's quite disappointing because I want to tell you guys the story. So this was actually at the Google headquarters. I was at Google headquarters at the Dart Hackathon.
Nice.
And someone was texting me from some anonymous account, and they had sent me a URL, and the URL was portfwdpodcast.com, which we actually own the port forward with the full whatever. And the site was a mysterious clone. It was all of our episodes designed in some new theme. Seriously, like, we had like an internet stalker. I don't know if you guys knew the whole story behind this.
Well, it was even more intriguing than an internet stalker, because an internet stalker is just like you on Facebook, like, you know, with that girl out of your league. Oh, God, I wonder if she thinks I'm a freak. And short answer, yeah. But anyway, with this website, it was a clone, like, of our website, you know, skinned, and we're like, how did someone make our website different?
Yeah, it was some real next-level effort, though.
I mean, it was like someone spent a lot of time. Yeah. So the guy told me, he said, do you know who I am? I said, yeah, of course I know who you are, which was a bluff, because I had no idea who the fuck it was. Turned out to be one of my old friends, and it was really interesting.
But you had no idea in the beginning.
I had no idea. And the part that was really creeping me out was after I told him that bluff that I knew who he was, I was like, how are all the episodes linked or whatever? He said, I copy all the episodes by hand. So for real, he was hand copying from our RSS feed. He was hand editing it into his own site.
That's pretty nuts.
So he didn't have the RSS. He was like, it was like the manual scripting.
It was impressive regardless.
And so what this was is his name is David Secra, and I'd like to give him a shout out. I eventually found out who he was. He was one of my friends, and he had been overseas as part of a Peace Corps sort of deal he was doing. And he literally had very little internet and was able to download the HTML and work on it all offline and get it all set up correctly and then put it up there.
To put the old site to shame.
Very little internet, but intermittent internet connection.
Exactly.
Too.
Exactly.
It's like third world internet.
Third world internet.
They don't call it that. Developing nation internet.
Literally, it was literally developing nation internet, and I'm quite impressed. And we would love to have him on as an interview at some point.
Yes, we should, definitely.
In the end, I just let him log in, and he actually remade the entire theme on a WordPress theme. So he actually rebuilt it to work with WordPress, because his was all done by hand.
Exactly, and then just to clarify that, the site that the clone of our site that we're running WordPress on with a generic theme we had, he coded his own site, hand-coded his own site, roughly, to clone our WordPress.
A visual clone, right?
Yeah.
And then he had to go back and rewrite it to be an actual code, so it actually was a WordPress skin, so it would work with our website. So awesome, I want to give him a big shout-out, that was awesome.
For sure.
Yeah. The effort does not go unnoticed.
No, definitely not. So, thank you, David. another thing I wanted to cover was the real episode 25, the original episode 25, where Merrick and I went out for beef jerky and water. You've heard that, Merrick?
Yes.
Remember that exact crazy night? Sam, I don't know if you listened to that either.
Not yet.
Oh, Sam.
Working on it.
Falling down. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's in the queue.
So we recorded that on my iPhone 5, and I would like to do some gripes about recording on the iPhone 5.
Do it hard.
Well, fucking, first off, I couldn't figure out the voice tool. We couldn't figure out the voice. Merrick and I were a little bit, you know, had imbibed some alcoholic drinks, and we couldn't figure out where the voice icon was. And since my home screen is such a clusterfuck, we were basically yelling at Siri to open the microphone recording app.
I'm sure that worked really well.
On the second try, she finally figured it out. It was pretty funny. So once you record it, I needed to send it to myself, and I didn't want to sync it with a different computer because I didn't have the originally synced computer with the whole, you know, the whole iTunes bullshit.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Fucking which prevented iTunes. Me from doing the iTunes route, so then I had to send it to myself, and when you email it, you have to send it only in, like, 15 megabyte chunks or whatever.
Oh, God.
So I literally had to splice it together. I had to divide one file by three chunks and one file by four chunks.
Damn.
It's a disaster. Benjamin, you don't have you have an iPhone 5, so you must be running iOS 6.
Yes.
So you have no jailbreak?
No.
You can't get any actual work done on your phone?
No. Jailbreaking is not for my vocation. If I'm going to be a developer, I can't be jailbroken. It's not on my main phone. So it's the right decision for me. Yeah. But, you know, Merrick has a really cool phone. I don't know. Have you talked about your phone yet?
Yeah, not, I don't think we mentioned it last time, but I've got Nexus 4, and I think it's awesome. And I was about to chime in there just a second ago and be like, well, if you had a Android device, perhaps running unmolested Android OS, Jelly Bean 2 now, I think, you could do all kinds of fascinating things, of which I'm still discovering, and so far I like them a lot. I have had some minor migration issues, as in all my contacts and text messages. I'm still playing with getting those on the new phone, but
right.
So far I have a complaint that may or may not make it into the show, which you guys will find out about one way or the other, either me screaming in this or a future episode about, you know, how slick the back of the phone is. But other than that, I like it a lot.
You reserve your right to yell about that in the future.
Just calling it.
Well, and how is the phone? Is the phone awesome? I mean, are you like 100% satisfied? Like any iPhone woes, I guess?
The little stuff that, you know, I'm not sure if I like yet or not, I can't really complain too loudly about because of, you know, how much iOS time I have logged versus Android time.
Right.
So it's not like I'm like, well, I like how this is in iOS versus this shit because, you know, I'm new to it. But the first thing and what I'm still super excited about is the massive screen compared to, you know, even though they did bump it up a little bit for the iPhone 5, I still have all kinds of real estate on top of that even.
Cool.
And it does have a pretty high pixel density too, like cool. It's definitely what you would call in the range of Retina. It's I think I don't remember exactly, but maybe some small amount of pixels below the actual iPhone 5, but it's close enough where, you know, you can look closely and not see pixels. So I'm stoked about the massive screen and the ability to customize the theme and front end. The whole GUI interface is super cool to me. Like when I started out, I'm like, all right, this is Android, this is cool, and I randomly landed on this site called MyColorScreen.com, and I saw this awesome theme, and I'm like, oh shit, I want to try that. And it had like 13 steps. It got me plugged into UCCW Ultimate Custom another C something widget and one of their little app to help get it set up, and then I've got this pimped out theme, and I'll link to that shit in the notes so you guys can see what the heck I'm running. But I'm excited about that.
That's cool, dude.
Very cool.
That's really awesome. Sam, I wanted to give you a little bit of an update with Join Me.
Oh, please.
So I've been working really hard on iOS, and I finally learned to obey all the rules of the Steve Jobs playground, you know, learn how to, like, do all the things the way they want you to. And really recently, probably, like, within the last 6 days, I feel like I've kind of climbed the mountain on iPhone programming. Like, I'm not, like, really good, but I'm no longer, like, a noob. Mm-hmm. And I'm really excited to show you the new version of Join Me, which has a slider menu and new notifications.
Fantastic.
Those two things together, I really think you're going to be like really impressed. So I hope that we are able to make a build soon and send that to you because, you know, actually I could just send you on test flight right now. Oh shit! I could totally send you something. I should send you the build, dude.
Stolen test flight, I believe. Is that going to run on 4.3.3?
No, we kicked to 5, so actually, no, so I can't send you anything.
Yeah, sorry, dude. However, are you using some sort of dynamic thing in order to deal with the difference between 4, 4S, and 5 screen resolutions, or how are you dealing with that?
So some of our code is not as clean as I would like to as far as those situations, so I'm actually just basically putting an if statement that detects the different phones. The phone does a really good job of dealing with non-retina and retina automatically, but I have to do all the 5. So basically, I've just added an additional if statement in maybe 10 places that I need to. If iPhone 5, do this instead. And that's all.
Yeah. But, you know, these days, developers...
Wait. Mm-hmm. To answer your question again, you said, how are you dealing with that, right?
Yeah.
So a lot of the code will be like, move this to 100 pixels. And so what I've done is I'll say, move it to, you know, let's say it's just Y pixels or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. I subtract the iPhone 4 height, and then I add back the height of the existing phone. So if I'm iPhone 4, it'll say minus, you know, iPhone 4 plus iPhone 4, that's 0. Mm-hmm. But if it's on the iPhone 5, it gives me the difference.
Right.
I just grab the difference, and then it'll move it down that much farther, and things are happy.
Do you find the resolution of the iPhone 5 to be odd?
No, I find the resolution of the iPhone 4 to be odd. Oh. It's much more natural to have like the 6, is it 16 by 9? Is that what the...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's much more natural.
Well, that's the conventional, you know, what you would call a widescreen display.
Mm-hmm.
Or what is referred to. As in the old days when you were a little kid, depending on how old you are now, or what your people around you that were older, the square-ass TVs they used to watch were presented in 4:3, and then
what is that called exactly? Your pixel ratio?
Aspect ratio.
Aspect ratio.
So that used to be the old square television sets was 4:4:3, I think, and then widescreen started happening, and movies started happening in widescreen, and it was like, well, I'm sure movies were there way before, but eventually widescreen content made it into, you know, the consumer place, and it was awesome, and I love it, and yeah, wider is better.
It's actually, it's not 16 by 9, it's 9 by 16, because it's vertical, which is interesting. I mean,
again, just a little disclaimer, I'm Liz Dexic, so anything I ever say is probably backwards or forwards, because I was thinking about it. And then, yeah, that whole thing.
Good times. So, you know, there's some math involved, Sam, but, you know, we're using a slider menu, which works really well, and I'm fucking stoked for it. It's so slick, dude. So,
well done.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt you. I actually was playing with it on Ben's phone, and last time we were hanging out, and I was pretty impressed because I was like, oh shit, this app is like, you know, Facebook, and Facebook is huge, and they have a fucking 1,000 people working on this app. So I was pretty impressed.
I'm pretty stoked.
Well done, Ben. It seems like there's more to deal with. You got non-retina devices, retina devices, iPhone 5, iPad mini, and full iPad, both retina and non-retina displays
well,
to deal with.
It's just not scalable, because if you take a look, eventually Apple's going to head towards the way of Android.
Seems like it.
But that's unfortunately the reality of display sizes. It's the reality of having a fixed number of pixels that has to be in your pocket, because everyone's going to want to do their own thing.
And it's cool that even though we have kind of chaos as far as how many portable devices are out these days, and, you know, it sucks to make any content for any number of screens. If you have to, you know, obviously there's solutions, but at the same time, there's this counter movement called responsive design. And what that is your design, your product will respond to the screen it's being displayed on, and shit will scale up and down near seamlessly. And obviously that's the ideal, and obviously not everything works like that, but I'm starting to see that in a lot of websites, and I'm pretty excited. And, you know, when I'm playing with themes or playing with new stuff or testing something, I'll just grab the side of the browser and drag that shit all over the place. And if everything goes down small, you're like, oh shit, responsive site. And that's how you know it'll work on mobile.
And so that's also how you know that the person paid some attention with love to that.
Definitely, yeah. The people behind it know that their shit, or want their shit to work on all the screen sizes, so they do that, and it's awesome.
Good times. Mm-hmm. How have we all been doing? Usually we start out the show by talking about what we've been doing. I told you guys a little bit about Join Me. I've been focusing on that slider menu. Anyone else want to go? Let's hear Sam, because we know a lot about Merrick.
But... Yeah, it's been a while, Sam. Catch up.
I suppose it has been a while. For myself, let's see. That's a whole lot of different stuff to cover.
Well, last week,
focus on the tech stuff. I don't care.
Yeah,
about
new fun, cool stuff you've seen or done or whatever. Just anything that's impressed you in the recent history since you've last hung out with us.
The stuff that's been plaguing me the most, tech-wise, it has been Windows 8.
I was sort of plaguing. I knew where you were going. You said plaguing, and I totally knew it.
Because, you know, I mean, a lot of stuff that I end up doing is sort of an added role is IT. And what Microsoft decides to do kind of ends up affecting me. And people continue to buy new computers, and all those new computers now come with Windows 8. And the response is the same from every single person that I've encountered who uses or has tested or anything with Windows 8 and is using it in sort of a work setting to do actual work. And I don't know if this is the time to get into Windows 8, Ben.
All right. Well, that's definitely Distraction Depth 1, and hold that in our Git stash that really quick, right, Sam? Right, Merrick?
So you, jumping back to something I think I caught, are you running the iPhone 5 now, Sam, or no?
No, I'm running the iPhone 4 with 4.3.3.
Because he's jailbroken, and he's sitting pretty on all of his customizations, which you can't take with you.
Pretty much.
Sad. It's sad when it comes time to unjailbreak, because then you're back to iOS, vanilla iOS.
Yeah, just, you know, it's something I'm going to try to avoid doing as much as possible. However, if I could tell you guys, I purchased a brand new case that I got, and it's called the iBattery case.
Yeah.
Made by Lenmar. This, if you don't have a case already that you're absolutely in love with, I strongly suggest that you pick one up. It is basically just a little case, slip your phone into, and it has a battery built into it. And I'm sure you've seen them. They're pretty much anywhere, AT&T store, Verizon store, and the Apple store. But this particular one struck me as the best one. Due to the plastic, the material that it has, it just is kind of, it's smooth, yet it grips really well. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that.
So Merrick wants some gripping is what he wants.
Oh, exactly. God. So you would be totally into this so if bad. They have one for the Nexus 4. But on the back, it has these four little LEDs and then a silver little button. So if everything's totally charged up, it'll all four of those blue LEDs will be lit up. And so by default, when you unplug it, like right in the morning, you have it fully charged up, you unplug it, it immediately begins continuously charging your battery. And you get about an extra hour or an hour and a half per blue bar, even with pretty heavy usage. So that thing will last me from about 7 a.m. until about 3 p.m., and then it'll switch over to using the regular iPhone battery. So that thing lasts a really long time.
So it must be, it must be more efficient to keep the battery at the top than at the bottom, or than in the middle somewhere, right?
Yeah, I thought about it. At first, I was leaving it off, you know, and only using it towards, like, the end of the day and just would start charging it up, and I realized this thing depletes it in a sort of not such a good way because, you know, the iPhone 4, one of the big bragging features of it was that it had, 300 hours of standby or something like that.
I don't know.
Right. And so if you think about it, all it's doing is using that battery to complete the trickle charge.
Yeah, exactly.
And seems to work really well. So if you don't already have one, I strongly suggest you get one. It's probably the best purchase.
For me, it would be $90, but I don't have battery problems, so.
Oh, yeah, not yet. I mean, I don't know.
Oh, yeah, not yet.
I mean, the lithium-ion batteries, it's bound to happen at some point.
And I would kind of put you guys both in the power user category. So you guys are heavy users, and it sucks when you're a heavy user and your device doesn't last as long as you do throughout the day because you're pissed. And especially if you're not near a power source or you don't have your charger, you're like, what the fuck? I have this fucking ridiculous phone, and all of a sudden I'm back in the dark ages calling people and sending, I'm paging people and trying to figure shit out on a payphone, and I feel like I'm homeless, and you get pretty annoyed.
People. Sad. However, Ben, how have you enjoyed the new Lightning port?
It's really cool. Did you know that there's a chip inside the cable that tells it which way it's orienting?
So you can plug it in either way.
Yeah.
Just like it's the little things about Apple's design that I still really do like. Like the MagPort charging shit on all the laptops, all the MacBooks.
Is it the same chip in the MagPort, since you can put those in both ways also?
I don't think so.
No, yeah, you can put the MagSafe whatever charger. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's different than, you know, the dock on your phone, obviously. The Lightning port or whatever the shit that's called on iPhone 5. That's totally different than the connector that they use to charge MacBooks. But what's sweet about the MacBook charger is you plug that thing in either way, and it totally just is like, all right, this is how we're plugged in. This is how we're doing it.
All right, so quick aside. So I'm an engineer, right? So I know how things are designed most of the time. And I'm looking at the MacBook one, and it's circular, meaning there's five pins, and they're laid out in a circle with one pin in the center. So if you rotate it, doesn't matter. They both have the same electricity, right? Mm-hmm. Now, comparing that to the way that the iPhone 5 works, now the iPhone 5 has 8 contacts on each side and then a ground plane. That is not double-sided. Like, it looks like it's symmetric, but it's not. They basically rotate the pins, you know, depending on how it's rotated, as opposed to the MacBook one where it's symmetrical. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So supposedly the deal is it's really hard to pirate the chargers on the iPhone 5, the charging cables. And the cables are really expensive because they have not been able to figure out how to pirate that chip properly.
Wow.
Interesting.
I've only seen an adapter so far. I haven't seen any cables myself. So that's how much are the cables? Do you remember?
50 or 40 for iPhone 5.
Ouch.
So there's, you know, one thing that's cool about Apple, and then bend over, because guess what? That's also going to happen to you when you buy Apple products. Those two things just happened. You like it a lot, and then you pull out your wallet and you're sad.
All right, Sam. So you asked if it was strategic design, right?
I mean, it seems like a pretty clever move on a lot of parts. I mean, one, you get to make the phone thinner, right? Because there's less stuff. I get that. Two, people are going to have to have – people always lose their chargers. First thing, it cracks, it breaks, you lose it. You leave it at your friend's house, whatever. You need another
one. Speaking of, mine has tape wrapped around it right now.
Already? Okay, case in point. So sooner or later, dude, you're going to be buying another charger. It's just going to happen.
No, I'm going to fucking put a shrink wrap around the outside of this thing before I fucking give it to someone else. Stress relief to the max.
Just out of curiosity, did you know how you broke it? Was it just like strain on the cable? Or
it's got a kink in the cable that keeps getting worse, meaning that the metal's getting thinner and thinner on the inside. Mm-hmm. And so I know it's just going to atrophy and rip right there. Gosh. So I've had to wrap tape around it. But
You're doing preventative maintenance.
Yeah, but it's got tape, so, you know. Sam, it was probably a strategic move, but I would say more like it is they were designing it. The design constraint was it has to be reversible, and they were like, well, we need to, you know, we need this chip. Okay, well, let's make it hard to use because, you know, now it's a strategic thing. But like, or let's make it easy for them to do it, right? But it wasn't like they probably set out like that in the beginning. I think it was just like a nice add-on after they kind of figured out what was going on.
Yeah, I mean, it seems pretty good. I mean, you can go right now on eBay, get yourself an iPhone 4 or 4S charger or any other iPhone, you know, whatever, iPhone 4S and below for 99 cents with free shipping from China somehow. Don't ask me how anybody makes any money off of that.
I have a fucking phone case with free shipping from China for $3.
It goes back to the old adage, you pay what you get for. You get what you pay for. And it's usually the 99 cent or the $3.99 deals don't last that long, obviously. The you can immediately tell when you have something that is from the lowest bidder because this shit comes from straight from Hong Kong into the flea market and into your hand, and you're like, oh, this should work. It's cool and almost free. So you go and use it, and then 3 or 4 days later, if it even works when you get home, the shit breaks. You're like, oh, okay, I'm just going to go buy the
Apple. I've gone through 3 or 4 different
manufacturers.
I want to say three different of those eBay iPhone chargers. They last about 6 months before they just don't work anymore.
Wait, same manufacturer or what?
No, just different sellers. I mean, who the hell knows? There's no way to know.
I have the one that. So I have one of those cables. It was the one that shipped with the fake ass iPhone.
Oh yeah, see, it's pretty much like one of those.
Those are so bad.
They're awful. Terrible.
Yeah, exactly.
They're really pretty shitty. And
So the iPhone 5 ones, apparently they charge in one direction, but supposedly they work, or so, I don't know. They're few and far in between. I don't know what the pirate scene is like, but it's really, you know, impossible to do. So.
So on a random side note, if any of our listeners out there happen to know an actual hardware pirate, we'd love to have him on the show that speaks English, obviously, because there's going to be that little barrier. But if you happen to know someone who knows someone who knows a real hardware pirate, yeah, hook them up, because that'd be sweet to talk to them and find out what the hell their crazy life is like.
All right, so Merrick, Sam has been gone for a couple episodes, and we haven't really talked to him, but Merrick, just give us a quick recap of your job change, I think, and then what you've been doing.
Back in the day, I was working on one side of Santa Cruz, and now I'm on the other. I'm stoked, and it was – what's interesting about where I live is I'm in – a close enough proximity to, you know, what's referred to as Silicon Valley that I'm able to go there whenever I want, but even for me to commute there would be a huge pain in the ass. Ben lives in it, and Sam lives a little north of it, but the shit is there, and I could not spend combined because of, you know, people who do commute, it would be roughly 45 minutes minimum each way for me, and I cannot spend that much day and keep my sanity, time of my day, keeping my sanity, driving, so on and so forth. I love driving, but traffic just sucks the life out of me. So I have been working in Santa Cruz, which is where I live, and I started out with a job on one side of town, and I randomly, kind of almost an accident, found out about a company on the other side of town, and they're like, well, you should, you know, come meet with us for a little bit. And we had a couple meetings, and they made me an offer, and I was stoked because there was a decent raise for moving across town. The office was better. The people were cooler. And I'm not saying my old place was terrible or anything. It's just I was used to, let's call it the status quo, and there was even some minor aggravations and frustrations with what was happening in that shop. Somewhere in the past episodes, you can hear some of that, and then all of a sudden, this opportunity pops up across town, and I start, you know, I started out doing the same exact type of work, just on bigger sites, and getting paid more, and I was stoked on that. And even more recently, we're shifting away from PHP and Drupal, and I'm actually at work now getting paid to learn Node.js. And
oh, that's so awesome, Eric. You've arrived. You finally arrived, that. Dude.
So, yeah, it's sick. And it's kind of an opener, eye-opening moment coming from the realm of PHP into Node.js. Like, I'm still getting a handle on it, but I'm impressed and excited in new ways because you get used to thinking in a convention when you're building something, you know, in PHP, or at least in a language that is what could be referred to as blocking. And it's hard to just flip your mind around and work in code or a language that is non-blocking.
Yeah, it's kind of nuts.
I'll probably touch on that a little later when I talk about the history of Node. And when I say Node, I'm referring to Node.js, as most you will come across people using it interchangeably out there on the interwebs. So that's one thing equals the other, you know, in the sense of people talking about it. Obviously, there are other nodes in the world, like in the networking, node is, you know, a term, and I'm sure it's used in other, you know, sectors, industries too. But I'm stoked to be at the new job, and even though I was a little freaked out at first when I started playing with Node, I'm getting excited about it now, and I've been doing a little research about the history of it and the creator, and unless you guys are want to comment on that or have any other questions, I can shift into that now.
Whatever works. Sam, would you want to talk about Windows 8 now, or you want to talk about Windows 8 in a bit?
I think after Merrick's breakdown here, it sounds like he's ready to go.
Okay. All right, Merrick. Merrick's hot and ready to go.
So, yeah. The guys at work, we've got a couple guys upstairs that are our lead developers, and they started with Node roughly a year ago. And why was because we had kind of hit some barriers. Well, not kind of. We had been hitting barriers with PHP and Drupal for a while. And not to simplify it down to a PHP versus Node thing, but we have our few of our larger clients were running very large websites on Drupal 6, which is locked into PHP 5.2.3 or lower.
All right.
So the new fun stuff you can do in PHP is only available in the later versions that have been coming out recently, and we couldn't touch any of that because this stuff was all locked into each other. There's no upgrading PHP without bad things happening. And then,
so they're not backwards compatible?
In a sense,
or maybe they deprecated something at that stage.
Yeah, it's not impossible to say you could run Drupal 6 on a newer version of PHP, but the amount of work is would
substantial.
Crazy. And then all of a sudden you have to look at the existing code base we have and how much shit would need to be gone through. And yeah, you know, it's funny, you get to work on something big, or what you think is big, and then you go somewhere else and you work on something bigger, and you're like, oh shit, that shit I thought was big was actually kind of small because this is big. And you know, that can scale up and down, you know, as
exactly
much as you can imagine. So just to, for instance, on the larger site I work on now, freedomworks.org, the, you know, the comments table has over 4 million rows in it, and it's when you do
Merrick,
we're losing him.
We're losing Merrick.
Hello?
Hello? Yeah, we're losing you.
Oh, fuck my life.
I wonder if that's an internet thing or if it's a headphone thing.
Can you hear me at all?
I can hear you fine now, yeah.
Now? Maybe
yes.
Lag. I don't know. Shit, sorry. Let me know. Hit me up again. So, with there's roughly 200,000 users on the larger site and registered users. And with a site with that many users on it, in any running on any kind of PHP in any framework, it is going to be slow on any number of servers. And I know that's kind of crazy to say, like blatantly. You're like, well, what if you just threw, you know, 10 more fucking super large AWS clusters at it or something like that? Yeah, you can make PHP faster, but there's some inherent issues with, you know, a growth. Growth can only go so far with what we were using without, you know, all kinds. And the guys upstairs, they did amazing things to, like, with caching. There was like, caching solutions they used out of the box, and then they had to do custom stuff, you know, at lower levels. And there's some hardcore stuff I haven't even explored yet.
Okay, Merrick, are you with us?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Can you
hear me? Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay.
So they had to do all this caching, right?
Yeah.
And now, what makes Node different? Like, why is Node different than PHP, and why is the caching a different? How is it all different? As in the, you know, persistence versus non-persistence of the processes, I guess is a better way to say it. But
yeah, it was. I guess I don't know. It's I guess I was going to take it in a different direction. But
right, take it in your direction. I'm sorry. I'm distracting you.
No worries. I got distracted on talking about the old shit. And what's crazy about the new shit is it's. It's magnitudes faster, and you know it goes pretty deep as far as the differences. And the simple look at the difference is when you make a request to a PHP server and you go in and you're waiting for something to come back to you, conventionally nothing can go back and forth because that's a blocking operation. And while it's, say, loading something off the file system and preparing to give it back to you, unless, you know, there is some AJAX element there or something else, HTTP long polling, you cannot, you know, you can't be like, oh, hey, and this thing too, because the server's busy giving you that shit. But it's totally different over on the Node side of things, because instead of Node running down and getting stuck trying to pull a file out the file system, it says, oh, hey, go get that file and then let me know when you're done with that, and I'm gonna go keep doing all this other shit over here. Oh, you want to fucking know?
So what is that at its core? Hey, do that and let me know when you're done. What is that called?
Well, the asynchronous.
Yes,
part
correct.
Of it. Yeah, the asynchronous, you know, loop is what I've seen it referred to, and it keeps running. You know, it doesn't stop when it gets to a chunk of code and stay busy on that. It says, oh, go run that code, and then it goes to the next tick or the next thing, and then it's doing that for you. And
it's a run loop, which means that it's got all these different threads open at the same time, or even processes. They might be threads or processes or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And they're all jobs that need to be done, but they're all being done at the same time. And
yeah.
So when they're ticking, the tick signifies the CPU working on one job, and then at the tick, it means the next job is now starting.
Yeah.
And there is a cost for switching over on those jobs, but if you do it right, everything works really well. And that's different than PHP, because PHP has one process, right?
Mm-hmm.
It there's no switching back and forth. So it all of the things that are happening are just done at once.
Yep.
And so what that means is that either multiple threads are serving a single request, or only one thread is serving a single request. Is basically the difference.
Yeah, and I'm still, you know, understanding the lower levels of it too, but it's impressive. And you know, the guys upstairs will talk about how many thousands of things can happen per second versus on, you know, they have a fascinating not only test coverage suite setup, but what's it called when you test something for the numbers, when you're like, oh, how fast is this for performance?
Benchmarking.
They have an impressive benchmarking suite set up too. And they're like, oh, yeah, look how many thousands of users can do this shit on this site at the same time. And when you compare that to the old PHP Drupal way, it's like, you know, kind of like, oh, wow, that's amazing that this new stuff is that much faster. It's kind of like going from my beloved 1992 Corvette into a late model Lamborghini, and they're like, what? This is even possible? How do the laws of physics allow this? So that's kind of exciting. And anyway, ADD. The man behind this madness, his name is
work?
Ryan. Oh, sorry, no, behind Node, Node.js. Uh-huh. The guy who conceived and gave birth to this intriguing new language and way of communicating with a server is Ryan Dahl, D-A-H-L. And back in the 08-09 part of the timeline is, I think, when it first started to come out. And let me pull up that tab real quick that was supposed to already be up and tell you guys some more cool stuff about that stuff.
Solving the upload progress bar problem, the history of Node.js. So this article is basically talking about uploading something and having a progress bar that shows you how far the file is done. And this is traditionally a hard problem to solve with PHP because there's only one process that's handling the file upload. And one of the problems with the HTTP protocol is that it's a two-way thing. It's a two-way protocol, meaning messages are sent in both directions. But at first it's send, and then it's receive, and then that's it. You can never switch back to send again. So what that means is that as your computer is uploading the file, it's already missed its chance to continue dynamic connection. So if you wanted to report the status of the upload, you would have to start another thread, which would then mean you'd have to transfer state from one thread to the other, which is really hard on PHP because you only have one thread working on one execution at a time. So this is kind of this. Am I correct, Americ? This is kind of
yes, you
what
are.
This is.
And to you know, add on, it's not even just hard in PHP. It's hard in pretty much all the server side languages out there that are not Node.js. So it's crazy to think about. But the problem you just described exists for most of the non Node servers out there in the world right now, which is crazy. Unless, again, there's the little helper things that can help you, and people are using those, and that's how this shit works now. But it was and to be honest, the progress bar problem, when Ryan Dahl first saw his first upload progress bar, it blew him away. And he's like, how does, because he was,
you know, what's funny is that I've had this exact, we've all been aware of this problem.
Mm-hmm.
I was blown away the first time I saw it, too. I was like, holy shit, how's this being done?
Yeah, so that led him down the path, and it's interesting to think that such a little thing could have spawned kind of this revolutionary language and paradigm of serving content. But
this would be a good FizzBuzz test for a web developer or for someone either in Node or someone in another language.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it was inelegant, you say, give me your best shot at this. I don't care if it's really weird or hacked together, but give me your best shot at an upload progress bar and just see what they come up with. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That would be definitely.
So this article what that you sent me is what? It's a video and an article about what we just talked about.
What's cool is he did a kind of a, I don't know what you'd call it, maybe a roundtable or a meetup. Imagine a meetup before there was a Google meetup. That's kind of what he did. He did a little video conference with a users group somewhere. I think it was in Phoenix back in October 2011. And he, for 45 minutes, it's roughly, he talks about him and the history of Node.js and how it came to be. And there's some highlights here I'll tell you about. There will be a link in the notes too. And I recommend watching the video. I've watched the first three quarters of it earlier today. And it's pretty cool. There's some funny stuff too. And he was a math major, and he was working on he's working on his PhD in algebraic topology, and I can't even pretend to know what that is, but it sounds like not fun. And he got to a point in his studies where he was like, what am I doing? What the fuck am I doing with my life? And he's like, no one can relate to this stuff. I'm not working on anything that is world changing. Not that that was his primary motivation, but it was just
but it's not a bad motivation whatsoever.
Yeah. So he was like, he had this moment where he's like, oh my god, I'm completely over this, and he just dropped out of school and moved to South America with like $1,000. And that's
awesome, dude.
Super awesome, because I'm fantasizing about that shit right now. I have an awesome job. I'm getting paid to learn a new awesome language, and I'm still fantasizing about just picking up and going somewhere crazy and doing some crazy adventure. But I always think adventures. So he goes down south, and he's messing around, and he meets some students to move in with, you know, down there cheaply, and they're doing a little bit of like contract or freelance web development, and these new people he meet get him into doing it too, and he's, you know, messing around with PHP even back then, and he's making like, or helping out, you know, where he can and learning what he can along the way, and of course he'd been exposed to programming before in his studies because, you know, it was more like in the math sense, and, you know, I'm sure crunching crazy numbers or equations or whatever the hell people do with computers when they're math majors. So he was familiar with that side of it, and then he was, you know, dabbling in the web dev side of it too once he got down there and started meeting these people. And while he was down there messing around, is I assume when he had this progress bar kind of epiphany where he's like, whoa, shit can go back to the server and forth like that. I thought it only happened the way you described it before, and that got him excited enough where he's like, well, I want to do that. How do I do that? And he started digging into it. And that's, you know, back in those early days was, you know, that what led him down the path to realizing the problems with how servers worked and the inherent limitations of, you know, the HTTP, you know, back protocol. And forth communication
protocol.
So it was that bottleneck that got him thinking like, well, how can we do this differently? And he didn't even think then he could just come up with a new language that would change things. He started messing around in Ruby because he was like, well, you know, let's see if we can do this with Ruby. And he does like the syntax of Ruby a lot. And so he played around with it. And even though they made progress in one area, it came down to where it wasn't going to be possible what he wanted to do. And, you know, you take it a step further and you fast forward and all the different things he was trying. They messed around, I think, in like, what is it, Lua, Haskell, and maybe another language too. And they were trying just different things. And one way or another, they kept running into pretty serious roadblocks as far as coming up with like, you know, a synchronous server interaction. And then he describes it. Am I here still?
You're there. Are you, yep. Did you hear that, Sam?
Yeah.
That was awesome. Okay. I know you didn't. It was awesome.
Was it like the Matrix?
It was like a laser gun just fired off in my head.
So he talks about some more of the a little bit in between stuff, and then he eventually has the epiphany where he's like, "Wait, JavaScript!" And what kind of he stumbled onto it and he started thinking about it. He's like, well, people don't use JavaScript, and JavaScript is not used like a regular programming language. And at first you're like, well, that means we can't use it. But it actually turns out to be really good because there wasn't standard libraries for messing around with the file system or doing all the conventional stuff you would need to do on a server. And because those libraries weren't there and because JavaScript hadn't been really used that way yet, it actually meant it was a clean slate, and you know, in his kind of moment of realization, he's like, this is good because I can make it do what I want. And because this shit hasn't been built yet, it hasn't been built wrong. And I have the
Which
chance
is good.
To make
exactly.
it do what I want.
So he's using the Google, is it Google's V8 and V8 JavaScript engine, I believe
it is
Node.
Yeah.
When you compile it, you have to compile this whole fucking V8 thing. It's so annoying. It's like installing all this bullshit, and then you install Node, and it's like, oh, the library's wrong. That's some of the issues I had with Node. But once you get it working, if you think about it, it's running straight in C. It's running JavaScript straight to C. It's not like through the browser. It's not through some DLL Windows horrible bullshit. Like, it's compiled straight into C, so it's like one level of abstraction. And it's very efficient. It's pretty cool.
In its defense, it's actually
cool.
The Node install these days is super easy. So back when you were messing around with it, it's improved, just FYI. Like, I've had no bad experiences, if you can imagine that.
How about on the Linux server?
Yeah. No, I'm talking like a few commands, if you can believe that shit.
Awesome, dude. Awesome.
So the process has improved a lot.
On Linux or on Mac?
The development environment I set up myself, and then when I recently had a dev server provisioned on AWS for me to play around on,
cool.
I guess in defense of what I just said, there was a script that
they had
Carlos that I work with used to run on the server too. So there was some simplification I wasn't exposed to there, but
I would love to know what AWS ID or whatever you guys use and have that script. That'd be so cool. I'm sure that's proprietary or whatever.
I will. No. I'll bet it's nothing crazy that I can't share. So I will make a note of that and let's make a note.
Okay, and make sure.
Because, I mean, that's a barrier to entry and a barrier to people playing around with something is if it's fucking hard to get running on it, then you're going to be pissed and you're going to be less motivated to start playing with it if it's a super pain in the ass in the beginning. So
make sure you grab the AWS ID that you guys are using too.
I will. No, I'll get the –
you have to get both of those. And you know those are different –
believe it or not, it was a conventional Amazon AMI, Amazon Machine Image. It was a conventional 64-bit Ubuntu.
Right. But, I mean, you have to, but if you don't have the right ID or whatever – I guess it's easier, but before Ubuntu was officially contracted onto AWS, uh-huh. It was like the Wild West of getting Ubuntu installed. There was like no official serial codes or whatever, and the kernels are different in every availability zone. They're not the same unique number. I don't know if you knew that.
No, I did not.
Sam, are you with me on this, dude?
I'm with you, but I don't know anything about that.
So if I want to deploy a server in North Virginia, it's mm-hmm. one little serial number for like the kernel and stuff. Yeah. Like, for a vanilla machine, but mm-hmm. if I go to California, it's a different little serial number. So mm-hmm. like migrating is a pain in the ass, and like it's so weird. I don't know why they do it. It's like the disk ID, okay, but the disk IDs are like globally unique or whatever. I don't know the deal.
Well, hopefully that shit's not a problem anymore. I haven't had that issue, so maybe
because you guys have the one written down that you always use for your availability zone, so you've accomplished that. That's what I'm saying.
Good. Exactly. No, I'll get, if not our script, I will clean it up such that we can open source it, and then I will
post, put it on your GitHub, dude.
Yeah. It's a gist already, so I will. I'll make it happen. So back to Ryan Dahl.
This video.
Yeah, he kind of realizes, oh shit, JavaScript is going to be perfect for this. And at the time, at this point in his life, he had made it over to Germany in his adventure, and he was still doing similar work. But once he realized JavaScript was how he was going to make this happen, he stopped working. He like had a little bit of money, but not a lot, and he just spent 6 months straight hacking together the first version, this early version of Node.js, and he got it to a working point, and it was almost like, providential that coming up soon was JS conference in Berlin. And I don't know if it was the first or second JS conf or where that whole thing started or what the story was, but he got a hold of the people who run it, and he's like, hey, I want to come present this thing I've been working on. It's cool. And he had never presented something before, and he didn't know what they were going to do, and they're like, yeah, come give us a presentation and demo it and this stuff. And I guess presentations and demos and conferences have evolved over time, but they actually slotted him in for an hour after their, kind of back and forth. And he was a little bit weary of like doing this because it was his first time. And then once he got there, it was like he was really starting to freak out because there was 300 people in this room. And he was like, oh, I just kind of hacked this together. I don't know if it's going to work. And, we've talked about, the demo gods before and demo.
So how was his demo gods? I've spaced out for a second. What was his project he was presenting? Like just Node in general?
Well, kind of. Yeah, that was the reason why he was going there. But yeah. He actually had a demo to demo Node. So his demo, he had written an IRC server.
Okay. 400 lines. Yeah.
Yeah, that was running on some computer somewhere, and he had his little Linux laptop, but he goes to plug it in, and it just won't work on the projector they have there at all, because obviously.
Demo gods.
And so they're like, here, use this Mac laptop. And this is up there, like, while it's quiet, and there's, maybe even a microphone squeal in front of 300 people. They're like, mashing cables around and stuff, and you can feel the discomfort. As
Demo gods,
like,
dude, are so
doing?
Evil.
So, and there's a funny moment in this video that's linked to this article that I'm paraphrasing, and he, as he's describing it, he's like, he has this moment where he's like, I could walk out of the room right now. I could leave. No one knows me here. I'm just going to leave. I'm going to get on a train, and I'm going to leave Berlin, and I'm going to go somewhere else. And he fantasizes about just fleeing the scene. And it's hilarious, him describing it, because you can tell how uncomfortable he is, and you're like, oh, that sucks. If you've ever felt it before or something similar, you can anyway, it's a horrible feeling, but he stayed the course, and he got the shit. He was able to connect to his little IRC server on this other laptop, and he's like, all right, people, try this address, and they connected to the server in the audience, and everyone's like, oh shit, this is IRC server running pretty fast and on JavaScript running server side, and everyone's like, wait, what? How?
That's so cool, dude. That's awesome.
And like, you know, people's minds were blown in the audience. At first they're like, what's going on here? And they're like, wait. And it's not to say he was the first one to ever make JavaScript run server side, but he went about it in such a fashion and it lined up with this conference, and it was kind of like that tinderbox moment or that spark that was everyone's holy shit, this is amazing. And he had no money, essentially.
It's the validation of the idea. I've been talking about this a lot, about validation of yourself and your own ideas. Like, once you think, oh, I'm cool, this is a thing, it really helps you get a lot farther. It's kind of the same thing with this language, right? It's like the moment where it's real. It's a real thing now, right?
Like, you know, it was this random shit he was working on before. Like, you've heard people and their projects, you're like, oh, that's cool, I could see how that became a thing. But then once enough people are like, oh, yeah, this is going to be a thing, and when you hear them say that to you, you're like, oh, shit, this could be a thing then. And, you know, it's hard to your own self realize the capability of something, because, you know, we go back and forth a lot in our minds. But when someone else is like, oh, wait, yeah, that's awesome, that's motivation, instant motivation for you. And so a bunch of people in the audience came up to him after this, you know, what started out as, you know, the demo gods were cruel, you know, a ray of light from the kind demo gods. We haven't decided which ones are evil and which ones are good yet, but a ray of light broke through the clouds and shone upon him. And all of a sudden, his IRC server, people's minds were blown. He's excited. People in the audience were coming up to him and like, oh, hey, that's cool, and we want to either try to sell this, or we want to maybe let you work on this in your spare time. And finally, he talked to someone, a company by the name of Joyent, J-O-Y-E-N-T, and they're like, we want to build our server infrastructure on this. And he's like, whoa, I built this in the last couple of months.
In my basement.
It's probably not a good idea for you to do that, actually. And they're like, no, we'll pay you, just keep working on it, we'll pay you to do that. And he's like, okay. And he moved out to San Francisco, and that is how Node.js was born. So, and at that point when Joyent came to him late 2011 and said, let's do this, he went and started working on it. And he had been working on it for a year and a half up until the point of time when he recorded this video that is about 45 minutes long, and he talks about the history, you know, in more detail than what I just told you. And it's cool to watch because you get a sense of him, and he's entertaining too, and he's the perfect, you know, geeky nerdy guy, like, you know, whichever one you can identify with, you realize he, you know, he's triple OG nerd, like, you know, I don't know if that's a thing, but he's that way. So He talks about the birth of Node, and in that video in October 11, and then you fast forward to where we are here now, and believe it or not, he's not primarily involved in the day-to-day stuff anymore. Like, he was working on it, like, straight, hardcore, full-time job till early this past year, early 2012. So he put a solid year in working on it, and it's been blowing up since then. And even though we have mentioned it in shows previous, I had only been so vaguely aware of it and why it was cool. I didn't even know why it was cool, but I was vaguely aware of it, and I was like, oh yeah, Node.js, server-side JavaScript, cool. I never stopped to actually think about what it did or what it was. We've talked about it on this show before.
Yeah, we have.
That I'm part of, and I'm like, yeah, Node.js is cool. And then now, once I've been, you know, playing with it and seeing, once I've got behind the curtain, so to speak, I'm like, oh, shit, they weren't kidding. This kind of is some next-level stuff here. So It's funny how you can hear about something and you're like, oh, yeah, that's cool. And someone tells you it's cool, you're like, oh, that's cool. But then once you get hands-on with it and you realize, you're like, oh, they weren't kidding, this is cool. So I'm going to do what I can to make it easy for any listener that's remotely interested to get a Node stack running.
I love it, Eric.
You can play with it, because the shit is kind of mind-bending. And once you realize the capabilities, you're going to be like, oh, well, I don't know if I want to build shit on fill in the blank with whatever language you're working with right now anymore on the internet anymore, because it's not as good.
And so have you heard of the WebStorm editor? Splitbrain.com/WebStorm, something like that, or JetBrain? WebStorm. This editor, apparently, I just found out today, JetBrains.com/WebStorm has a really good Node plugin, and it's Mac friendly. And I don't know what sort of IDE you guys are using, but it's really cool. It's kind of like an IDE for, instead of just using Sublime Text. So
cool. Yeah, I ever so briefly, well, I didn't even use it. I was playing with Cloud9, which is also...
It's the web version of, yeah.
Oh, wait.
No, wait. No, well, sorry. I might be mixing something up. What's Cloud9?
No, I was playing with Cloud9, which is an online IDE too, and right. I believe Cloud9 is running on Node, but I don't remember if I heard that or I'm mixing it up, but I'll...
Oh, I gotcha. Does it work for Node, though?
It works for whatever you want it to.
But then it's not... then it's not a real IDE.
What do you mean?
A real IDE has deep language integration. Like, you can jump to the things. Like, you can refactor. Like, you can, you know, detect when a .h file is not included properly. Like,
I see what you're saying. So I don't know is the answer yet, because I launched it. I fired it up. I'm like, oh, I haven't used it in, like, an actual, you know, use case scenario. So I don't know. So it's I'll try to look into that. And maybe
Cloud9 is running on Node.js, just to verify
gotcha.
That. So
cool.
Yeah. There we go. But I'm telling you, WebStorm is a great editor, and I didn't know it did Node until just today, so I'm definitely going to check it out.
How
Maybe
did you
I will
hear about it initially? Or
all my freaking developers that joined me started using WebStorm. Like the next, it was like overnight, everyone was using WebStorm.
What were they running before that?
Either Sublime Text or they were new guys. It was like a couple guys came in and all, like one of my employees was running it forever, and then they all like a bunch of them all did it.
So this is
like,
the new shit, huh?
Yeah, it's the hot stuff that
watch out Sublime Text 2. Someone's coming into your town, fucking your girl.
It has really good features for working with a web server like FTP server, as far as saving up and down and being really intelligent about that. Like, I know that there's FTP editors, but they don't do a good job about tracking files up and down. You know,
totally.
So I think it does diffs. I think it does diffing between what's on the remote and local host, which is perfect. So. I'm not sure exactly, but I think that's kind of how it works.
Yeah, that's. It took me a few plugins, and it took me a little bit of annoyance to actually get ST2 or Sublime set up that way, because I have Sublime set up that way, but it definitely took us a handful of plugins to get it where we want it.
So just a quick finalization on Node. I was at some random conference, you know, shaking hands and taking business cards or whatever, and this guy, I don't remember his name, but he was working on a version of Python that was, like, I think it was similar to Node in that it was, like, multi-threaded and it was a callback-based version of Python.
Mm-hmm.
It's really interesting to think that this guy is worth spending his time. He's, like, actually trying to start a company around changing an existing language, Python, mm-hmm. to be set up the correct way, like the Node.js way. And Node was able to just do it from the ground up.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to think about that. one thing I would like to say is that Node is all about callbacks and stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But the Java MVC framework I'm using right now and other Java mm-hmm. MVC frameworks give a very good approximation. They're not quite callback like that, mm-hmm. but they have different areas of the data run on separate threads. And you can set up pools of the threads. So you know how there's like a pool of Apache threads that are, you know, whatever.
Oh,
when
yeah,
like
workers
standard
or
PHP,
whatever.
Like workers, yeah. right? So for Java, you can put workers around each individual resource, and they're asynchronous in between the workers.
Interesting.
So it's asynchronous. You've got multiple threads, but it's not a callback-centric. So you get a lot of the same benefits that... that Node gets, which is basically this application is continuing to run. It's not entering and exiting memory. It's just chilling out, right? Mm-hmm. And it's serving multiple different things all at once, but it's just chilling in memory, right? Which is pretty cool.
That is cool.
So this problem is really big, and I think that Node has nailed it on the head, and I really am getting I really kind of want to try and write something in really bad right now.
Yeah, no, it's I don't see it going anywhere except for exploding, because a lot of the pain points as far as people interacting with services, websites, whatever, has been, you know, the traditional back and forth. And, you know, how many times have you been using different websites where you accidentally tabbed out and hit the delete key and went back and, you know, either lost
all your
something,
shit's gone. Yeah, it's horrible.
You know, because there was an obvious lack of the server being aware of what the shit you were trying to do, and you accidentally doing something, and now all of a sudden you're about to, oh, Chrome, are you sure you want to submit this form you just submitted? And then you say bad words out loud, and everyone.
That's a good dialogue. And Java does have that problem, Sam, you know, with the whole Android iOS, the whole Android versus iOS split, you know?
Yes.
And I've heard someone say this, and I don't know if this is true or not, but they were talking about Java. I think it was on a forum or something, and they said, I would never trust Java that was running in like a multi-threaded kind of situation. Like Java, again, is another language that's been built from the ground up to be, you know, single-threaded. And I think that might be some of the problem that Android has as far as passing data back and forth and being, you know, done asynchronously properly, you know? And iOS has, I think, Merrick, I think iOS is at the same level as far as multi-threadedness as Node, at least in some way, because it's very callbacky. And I was talking about working on the slider menu, and this last maybe 6 days, I've really come up to speed on iOS programming. Like I said, I'm really stoked on that. But I've really also, just today, I just saw this really cool way of dispatching some asynchronous stuff I'd never seen before. And I think the way that it works, Merrick, is it launches a callback in the background, which then launches a callback in the foreground. Like it's like, and it's all in like six lines.
So it comes full loop that way.
And the thing about iOS, Sam, is that if you're doing things on the quote-unquote the main thread, that's the only thing that can interact with the UI. So you have this problem because you want to get data out of band, meaning not on the main thread, so it's not interrupting your UI, right? But then you want to update the table view once the data comes back.
So you end up with this lag that's built in, and you can't really get any other way around it?
Well, I mean, the thing is that making an internet request is always going to have lag, right?
Well, sure, but you...
But you don't... Okay, but this is the thing, though. You don't want to hold up the person from moving things on the screen in that lag time, right? So when you launch it on the background, that's the correct way to do it because now you don't have any lag. I mean, you have to wait for it to come back, but there's no lag time.
Right? Sure, they can still scroll around or move something.
Exactly, yeah. Right.
Once you have the screen freeze up, it's a whole different type of...
It's the old school way of doing it, which is kind of what we've been talking, discussing, that Node is doing the asynchronous stuff properly, as in it's not blocking progress. That's what it's. That's what we're talking about is blocking here. But the one thing that is annoying, Sam, is that, let's say I get my data back. It's all done correctly in the background. I get my data back. Now I have to draw that data to the screen, right? And the way iOS works is you have to use the main thread, which means there's always a little bit of a jerk because you have to draw on the main screen. Right. Even though you're not waiting for the data to come through, you're still doing draws. And so it still messes with... I don't know exactly like the totally the right solution, but it's pretty nuts that that you still have a little bit of like some kind of, you know, jerking or whatever.
That's a bummer.
Well, you know, it's pretty cool. So I was thinking about iOS and I was thinking about this whole Node thing, and I really... The more you use the callbacks and the more you get tricky and elegant with that, it gets... Your code gets really fun to write and really easy and really fast. So it's pretty cool. So Merrick, do you have any other final tips on Node here, or are we ready to go somewhere else?
Oh, that's pretty it. That's pretty much it. So yeah, let's roll right along here.
Thanks awesome. For the rundown, Merrick.
More to come too. I'm glad you guys found it interesting, and I'm glad everyone out there has patience with me when someone tells me something is cool like Node, and I nod my head and smile, and then I have to discover it myself, and I'm like, oh shit, they weren't kidding. Node is cool. So
yeah, we also appreciate the history lesson. It's nice to know how things, you know, come to be like that. Usually.
I'm kind of jealous of spending $1,000 and going moving somewhere. That sounds like pretty
doesn't
awesome.
It sound cool?
Yeah, it really does.
That's pretty awesome. Before I forget, have any of you guys seen the documentary about video games called Indie Game the Movie?
I haven't.
My
coworker
told
Netflix.
Me about that.
I'm pretty sure it's flagged on Netflix.
That's not to be missed. It's really, really very good.
Yeah, I want to see it. I saw it on Netflix. I'm like, yeah, I'll watch that because he said so. Now that two people told me it's awesome, I got
to
see it.
Well, Sam, I mean, I haven't heard from Sam in a long time, so anything he tells me is going to be listened to.
Yeah. Oh,
thanks.
So scarce. Sam.
It'll take him, like, what, two or three things, and then after that, you're like, all right, that's enough.
I'm
like,
go ahead
and ignore him for a while.
Exactly.
It covers just sort of these few developers who basically make games for Xbox and other sort of independent channels, you know, where you can release.
Well,
release
obviously they talk about what's the fucking Humble Indie Bundle? They obviously talk about that, right?
Say that again.
The Humble Indie Bundle, or no? They don't talk about that.
I don't think so.
Are you kidding me?
Well, tell us about the movie without spoiling it for us or giving us spoilers, Sam.
I'd like to really need to know what that indie bundle thing is, though.
If you humbleindiebundle.com, okay, and it's a bundle. It's not how you spell it. I don't even know what the – let's just Google for it.
We'll figure it out.
It's basically a collection of five or six games, and you get to pay what you want, okay? So it's five games, and you pay what you want. So you can pay $10, you can pay $50 or whatever. And then they show you ranks of people, the money that they paid, okay? And if they tell you who pays the most and who has the most revenue income, and all the indie developers get the revenue split correctly, and it's amazing, dude. It's like the best way for indie developers to release their shit, get recognition, and downloads.
Nice.
That's an awesome platform.
395,000 downloads for this one, or for the whole thing, maybe.
Sweet.
They've made $2.6 million in sales.
So what was the name of the movie again, Sam?
I think it's called Indie Game the Movie. It's on Netflix. I think is where I saw it.
I just favorited it, or whatever they call it.
Gotcha. We'll link that to the notes then, too.
I just instant queued it without using Text My Queue because...
Sad day. Yeah. Sad day.
Such a sad day. It might have something to do with the fact that you no longer personally need the service, Merrick.
Wait. If you click... if you go to humblebundle.com, the very middle icon, instead of a game, says the Indie Game the Movie, and it's like a clip about it.
Nice.
So are you sure they don't talk about it, Sam?
I just don't remember that in there.
Super Meat Boy.
Yeah, that's in there. I just
okay, so that's a Humble Indie Bundle game. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. Whatever.
But you like the movie, Sam.
Yeah, it's good. Don't miss it. Watch it. Just do it.
Nice. I'll watch it. I'll watch that shit tonight. What? What do you know about that?
What do you know about that, huh? Yeah.
How you like me now?
So, are you interested in indie gaming, Sam?
Yeah, I am. The issue is always comes back to time. I mean,
do you like side-scrollers?
Dude, for sure.
I so wish I had time.
I would play a fucking shitload
what's,
of games.
What's the game? I know the game is either featured in that movie or it's on that site you just talked about, but the game where the little dude's running around something and then the whole map shifts like it's on a...
That's Fez.
Fez, yeah. People have told me about that. Seems like it sounded cool.
The most awesome game ever.
What is it? Just help me describe what happens when you go around a corner in the game.
Yeah, it's basically two-dimensional, right? And so when you go around the corner, there's a shift in which you can get sort of this peak of the...
other side.
It rotates 90 degrees to reveal the next partition of the three-dimensional area, but it becomes two-dimensional again.
Yeah. So you have to keep rotating the map, so to speak, or the environment. You rotate the
environment. So he's like walking in a room, and then when he walks to the other side of the room, it flips 180 degrees, or it might flip, you know, just 90 degrees, and you would be able to see both rooms side by side, you know, and they're all cube. Everything's a cube, basically.
So 2D game, 3D environment, and you obviously – this is a big part of the gameplay, and it looks fun.
This must be done by the same guys as the Tiny Tower, right? Because it's the same characters, or what? Am I crazy?
I have no clue, but
Tiny Tower is an iOS game, and all the characters that you put in the tower look just like this game. It must be somehow related.
Huh. We'll have to look at that.
Anyways, yes?
Yeah, that whole game fell down to one developer. Yeah. And I didn't check and follow up if it ever got completed or not. I assume it is by now, but I don't know.
Interesting.
That's crazy. That's, you know, similar to Node. It came from this one person, and, you know, another Minecraft. I've heard Minecraft is huge, and I've tried it once, and it was like, okay, this is interesting.
There's such a cool demo, Merrick. I have to interrupt you. There's such a cool demo for this new game called coming out. All the world is just like Minecraft, but instead of the stupid build your own block thing, which is like whatever, you like actually have a game, so it kind of looks like Zelda. So imagine Zelda in Minecraft, but you have like weapons and you have like hang gliders. You can hang glide through the oh, it's so cool, dude.
How'd you hear about that one?
So I heard about that from Chris Fisher and the Jupiter Broadcasting Network. They were talking about it on one of the on one of those games, but yeah.
Nice.
All right, so you'll stick that in the show notes.
Yeah, I want to show it to I want to show it to America.
Indie gaming sounds awesome to me, but I sadly will have to agree with Sam that I don't have time to play this shit, even though it sounds awesome, and I feel like I'm missing out a little bit. Like,
dude, I completely feel like I'm missing out.
Yeah,
definitely.
We should probably re-examine our lives and see if we can't change.
So it's called Cube World, is what it's called. So I'll just put this in the thing because Sam is not there.
Even though I'm, you know, I'm in the PC-less world, apparently.
Yeah, well, you know, Apple has declared that the PC is dead, and
so
that's
PC era.
Post-PC era, yeah, exactly.
I happen to be using one, but whatever, it's no big deal. Random other game I recently heard of that is apparently popular. I don't think it's an indie game, but I have no clue. It's called League of Legends. And the other guy upstairs, well, one of the guys upstairs likes
to play
it. That's
an old game, for the record, but yeah.
Yeah, old as in what, like 3 years?
Yeah, old.
Well, anyway, I saw my first tournament online last night. It was like, you know, if you've ever seen a football game or any other professional sport with announcers and, like, you know, the teams and all that stuff, they do this with the game also. And maybe everyone knows about this, but it was the first time I'd seen something like that, and it was pretty interesting and entertaining.
So you watched a live tournament. Who was the announcer?
There were two announcers. I have no clue, but they
spectators
knew.
Or something.
There was it was a tournament for League of Legends or LOL as maybe referred to, and the teams we were far enough along where the teams were like I don't know the playoffs essentially, and gotcha. There was a couple teams, and I was just watching this shit unfold as like I was waiting for we were actually going to play this other interesting card game called Munchkin, which is fun, and it's kind of like a. I'll have to tell you about that in another show because I'm just like ADD level 3.79 or some shit right now. But anyway, it was interesting to me to discover that there was online gaming tournaments such that they were presented and, you know, like a football game on Sunday with, you know, sportscasters and people commenting on it. And then, you know, they go into like they go to first person view of the people playing each other, and there's, you know, the backgrounds are all lit up and it shows this team of five people on either side, and like, you know, they're all plugged into the Matrix and they have massive gaming headsets on, and it's actually pretty I care less about sports, but it was interesting for me to see the parallels and then be able to identify more with the people playing the game than actually, you know, the people playing football. And I was like, that's kind of cool.
That's cool, man. That's really cool.
So, yeah.
So that's some pretty epic indie games. So that all started talking about Indie Game the Movie. now that we're done with that, Sam, you want to tell us about this Windows 8 thing?
Yeah. I'd love to. This being sort of a technically inclined podcast, I assume many of you have already read about it. And Merrick, have you used it?
I've not. I have kind of been noticing the feedback is generally not positive.
Ben, have you had it?
So I've only used it on someone else's computer, and one thing I will say is that the source control tools installed fine. The one thing I will also say is that it was really hard to find the start run menu. And the other thing I will say is that Michael Dominic likes it because he doesn't have to use the mouse as much. I don't know if that's true or not, but...
Okay. Well...
What's as your experience saying, with it so far?
Yeah, as I was saying earlier, I have to do a lot of IT stuff in my job.
So how many computers do you have under you?
I no longer have Windows 8 installed in any computers. Okay. What I started out doing is I took one of my spare laptops, the TX2500
cool,
HP laptop.
I know what that is. Yeah, it's so old. That's old.
Yeah, it's an old 2007, 2008 laptop that has a resistive touchscreen on it, so it's a tablet, but it's you know, a convertible tablet, whatever the fuck you call it, and it's a pretty convenient device to sort of just play around with Windows 8 on. And I thought I would run it for a little while, see how it runs, and see if I can get work done on it, and then I would uninstall it back to.
What did you image it with Acronis or something or?
No, I just wiped whatever was on it and threw the Windows 8 developer preview on it back before it launched in the beginning,
right.
In you know, mid September, and. Unfortunately, I got way too busy with work, and I had a federal trial starting on October 1st. And the most trouble any of you guys can get into without killing somebody is ending up in federal court in front of a jury. That's the most trouble you guys are going to get into doing white-collar crime.
Nice.
So this was a white-collar crime involving an online pharmacy. And basically what they were doing is... they were approving and denying online orders for controlled substances. So if you guys wanted to buy something you need a prescription for, you could buy it on this website, and they would have an actual doctor review a little patient questionnaire.
Your freaking email or your freaking digital correspondence, right, as opposed to actually seeing you in person.
Correct. And the laws at the time, back in 04 through 06, were a little vague as to whether or not you actually needed an in-person visit. And so that's the time in which this website ran. And so anyway, the government didn't like it, and so they prosecuted it. And so my point is, I had to be in court a lot, and I had absolutely no time to downgrade and uninstall and get rid of
this
Windows 8.
So you took the Windows 8 challenge, as they say.
Oh, yeah, I mean, that's crazy.
I'm in the middle of this courtroom. There's a jury there, and I have my laptop out and doing a ton of work, papers everywhere. It's a disaster. This is part of the reason why I didn't talk to you very much, Ben or Merrick.
That's okay.
And, you know, got like... This case was at least 5 terabytes of data that I was managing with multiple servers and trying to have everything indexed. And well, I mean, it's a disaster worth of data. And so there I got my Windows 8 machine, and Jesus Christ.
Well, it's a shitty little computer, though, right?
I mean, yeah. The computer is a, you know, just, yeah, you know. It's not terrible.
No. I think you're putting it lightly. It sounds old and slow to me.
Yeah, it's not really slow.
When spinning disk, Merrick. It's got a spinning disk, so.
It's got a spinning disk. I did put an SSD in it at one point. It didn't. Mm-hmm. It actually was slower.
What kind of SSD are you running? Some cheap-ass Chinese one?
No, it was a Corsair M4 SSD. So it's a good one. It's just that I think that the controller card, whatever it has, is just definitely not optimized for it. It was awful. So I put it back into a regular 7200 spinning, and so now it's
fine.
The
laptop is so old it won't support SSDs. That says it right there. It's a piece of shit.
Yeah.
Okay. So you had a bad user experience. Let's hear about it.
Yeah. So one of the issues with it, really, and Microsoft has done this research in the past when they had the experience of trying to, I think that they did some beta testing between running Windows 95 and the 3.1 Program Manager, and all of their testing proved that running two user interfaces at the same time was a big mistake. And,
so let's hear about this again. So it was back in 3.1 days.
Yeah, the 3.1 to Windows 95, as you guys, I don't know if you guys remember, but that was
a big
transition. You know, yes. Went to use Windows 95, and I was like, how do you load a program? Like, where is it? And
it had like 16-bit color as opposed to 8-bit color, first off.
I mean,
mouse, like real everything.
Yeah.
Everything was real.
Yeah, you're really in Windows. You're not sort of in DOS. Like, you know what I mean?
It was real. Exactly. So it was their first attempt as an actual operating system, I would say. I mean, whatever, but...
Or like a fully GUI operating.
Like a full GUI, as opposed to an emulated GUI or some bullshit.
Correct. With Windows 8, you end up with this issue where you log in, and so it tries to tie itself to your Windows Live account. So, you know, I have a Hotmail, so I just sort of signed in with that, and that's cool, I guess, because then it's sort of tied to that account, and that's what you use as your – it becomes your default, like, lock screen thing, where it's your password tied to your Hotmail. And so when you click the mail icon on your Metro, which I guess they now call the modern UI, mm-hmm. When you click your, you know, mail icon, it loads up and will show your Hotmail. The real issue is how – is just how this whole thing is treated. You know, you're supposed to swipe across to see your apps, because apparently there's some distinction between application, program, and app these days.
Yeah, there is now.
Microsoft's definition of what an app is simply running something in full screen. That seems to be what they call an app. Because if you're using a computer and you make something full screen without being able to see anything else, including the system tray, the taskbar, the start orb, whatever the fuck they want to call it these days, you know, you're now running something in full screen, not maximized, full screen.
Well, there's a difference, because when you're running maximized, it means that Windows is still controlling the base and giving you permission to draw. And when you're drawing full screen, you've told Windows, please put drawing on hold. I'm going to do all the drawing. And you're taking over and drawing over everything. And Windows can kick you out of that mode, but for now, it's relinquished control of the screen, basically.
That's correct. They decided these early UI decisions that they made, for example, to hide the start menu when you're using the, I guess what they call, I don't know what they call it, just the desktop mode, where you're looking at regular, what looks like Windows 7.
Yeah.
You know, the start menu is hidden, so the only way to see it is to actually move the business end of the mouse all the way to the lower left corner. I mean, all the way. Not kind of there, completely there, and then it will reveal the start. It's not really an icon, it's a...
Orb.
Overlay? No, it's not even an orb, dude. It's an overlay.
I'm just putting words in your mouth. Okay, continue.
Thanks. So you click it, and the tiles sort of whoosh back in, and you're in this, looking at the tiles again. And so this switch, this is a very schizophrenic thing where you're, for example, you're trying to look at something in Adobe Acrobat, because that's what people do with a lot of work stuff in a lot of different fields. You have to use Adobe Acrobat just because that's what you have to do. It's annoying because you're moving in and out pages, you know, rotating pages, I don't know, dragging them out and dealing with Explorer a lot. There's no way to do any of this using the modern UI. And it appears as though Microsoft really wants you to use the modern UI because it's so new and fancy.
No, it's not because it's new. I'm fucking... Don't make me defend Microsoft at you, dude. It's because it works on ARM and x86 at the same time. It's platform independent, dude.
I get that.
If you do that, that means that Microsoft is trying to make a move towards Apple, because Apple has everything on ARM, and their ARM ecosystem is super, super rich and thriving. So if they make a new, that, you know, they're basically breaking old compatibility. This is like one of the first times that they've broken old x86 compatibility, because at some, because you can't sell traditional apps in the App Store; they all have to be recompiled. And I think that's a really good move. I mean, it's super annoying, but I think that the ability to be in a PC-less world, I think this is a step. If fucking Steve Jobs or whoever, Apple, wants to claim that we're in a post-PC era, we're not there until Windows has gotten their shit figured out with this whole modern UI bullshit. But it's, if it happens, dude, that's what we're going to be at. And you're going to be so happy in like 4 years, you're going to be like, this is the shit. Or maybe not. Maybe it's going to suck for the whole entire... Maybe because you can't use Photoshop there, no one's going to ever use it.
Yeah, I don't know how... I mean, one of the things is bringing up a new Explorer window is a big sort of challenge with Windows 8.
You can't just start E?
I mean, you can. All those shortcuts work. Windows R for run, that's how you do it. That's just the way, the fastest way ever to bring up
I
run.
I would be happy with that. I would be happy to keep all my... Because I use the keyboard like a motherfucker. I don't know. I guess on a tablet with a resistive screen, which is pretty shitty anyways.
Yeah.
It's probably hard to figure that out. I mean, do you put it in tablet mode, or did you always use it in laptop mode?
I switched between all of them to try. I really tried to give it a fair chance, and to be fair, I had absolutely no time to fuck around with it, so I made myself really familiar with it. So I
no time to fuck around by meaning no time to go back to what you wanted to go back to.
That's correct.
But
so,
you did have time to fuck around with your cases and shit.
Yes. So, there's too many curious decisions. Like, if you just double click on a PDF without installing Acrobat Pro or anything like that, it's going to open in something they have. They have a reader app, so it's just there. However, there's all this screen real estate for stuff to be there to help you, like to be able to reorder the pages or whatever. But they don't take advantage of any of it. So, to the left and right side of your screen, of your widescreen computer monitor, which you probably have on your new laptop, it's just black.
Well, reactive layout, right, Merrick?
Responsive
layout, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, continue.
So that shit, there should be shit there, though. You should be able to do what
you
should
be able to do something, but there's nothing. So. You know, I was trying to find a scroll bar. I'm like, is there a scroll bar? Can I fucking scroll down in this thing? No.
Click and drag, right?
I mean, I just ended up pushing the page down key.
Sam, what can you click? You can click and drag, though, right?
You know, I don't remember if you can. I don't think
that
you can.
That would be the point of a freaking touch-enabled interface, is that you'd be able to click and drag.
Maybe.
Might have scrolling, and you don't have scrolling because you only have a single button interface. It might be really. It might be like running an iPhone on a fucking Android hard, like something fucked with the screen.
Right. Like, you know, I factored in this. Like, I understand because I'm not using a brand new machine that's designed for it, like with a capacitive touchscreen. Like, I gave it those leeways. Like, I'm thinking, okay, well, I'll do it this other way.
I know you did, but I'm still arguing Microsoft at you, which I don't want to be doing.
I know.
Because some of these things you're saying. All right. Okay.
Totally with you, and I'm happy.
No, you're
to
not.
Have
you're
the,
with Microsoft.
The
you're
devil's me, advocate on there.
You're making me go to Microsoft. You're not with me at all. You're on the other side of wherever I should be.
Well, here's the thing.
No one knows where you are or where you should be. Anyway, so back to the PDFs. And
So there you are in your PDF looking through it. I'm scrolling down. But all the stuff that I OCR'd that I needed to copy and paste, I can't access that with the reader thing. So screwed there. And then let's close out of it. Well, I personally happen to know that I can hit Alt F4 and close anything like that. But who else knows the Alt F4 combination? All of us people on Port Forward Podcast probably know it. But anybody else?
What about regular users? They go for the little X on the
window.
Yeah,
they look for the X. Oh, where's the X? It's not there because you have to awkwardly click and drag from the top all the way down to the screen to close it, which sort of works kind of. Not with the mouse. It only works with the touch.
So it always works, and you have a shitty touchscreen. That is definitely true.
Okay, and so what if I'm on my desktop using my mouse? It won't close that way.
It's horrible, and so this is one of the things, is that Apple has done a really good job of keeping their shit separate, right? But, you know,
clarify, you mean between the desktop environment and iOS.
Exactly, and Windows is trying to unify the UI gestures, and this is one thing where I will agree with Sam that it's horrible. The fact that you have to swipe to unlock the machine at the very beginning and then swipe to whatever close is out of control. Like, you can't do that and have it be, like, you can't take that assumption on the PC, right, Sam? It's just not going to work.
you can see that shit pissing people off too. Like, what if something's not right and they go to swipe on their desktop and it doesn't work, and then they get mad and they swipe harder and then they just knock a bunch of shit off their desktop, and
that would be horrible.
Oh god, you want to stab someone if that happened? I'd be so mad.
And so right click is no longer right click. Like, I think, well, let me just right click on this paragraph and it'll give me some options. Oh, no, right click brings up all of the options that should have been available in the first place, like the things at the bottom that say, like, for example, if you're on the home screen of Metro or Modern and you right click in one of the free, in the empty space.
Free space, right.
Yeah, all these little options will appear, like view all apps. Like, that's a great button. Why was that hidden? Weirdly, wish I should right click somewhere to make that appear.
But not anywhere in specific, right? Just right click.
Yeah, you right click and it brings up like a few little options, like unpin all, you know, like there's just those types of options that you would expect to see. There's so many things that are hidden that you just don't know how to make them appear. And then they have strange things like the charms bar at the right-hand side that has universal things like, it's supposed to be universal anyways, settings has a start button is there, search, so you can search within that program or app that you have open.
Which only if they support it or whatever, yeah.
Right, but that's one of the things. You click an app and then you're like, oh, just search. And you click it and it says, sorry, this program does not support search. It's like, what? Okay, so it's sort of universal, but kind of not, but only sometimes. And there's a lot of that feeling of this is how you do it, but only sometimes, kind of.
Gotcha.
And that whole thing is just so broken. You click, like, for example, if I just bring up the Modern tiles thing and I type note for Notepad, Notepad will appear. I click it, it'll switch to the desktop and then bring open a Notepad. What? Right. What? Nice. What happened to all my stuff? And how do I go back? Oh, I hit the start button. Okay, that makes sense. You'll get used to that pretty quickly. Hit the start button, it comes back. But what about when you're in that reader thing? Again, like, how do you go back to what you just had open?
They're breaking the alt tab stack, right? Or they're breaking the previous, like, the, yeah, the UI.
Yeah, that's
flow,
another
right?
thing. You can use Windows tab, which used to be Flip 3D and Vista and right. 7, and right. now it's used to switch between active apps. Windows key and tab. But okay. If you use alt tab, it switches between all open things, period. So that's kind of okay, I guess. But, you know, truth be told, like, how many non-tech people do you see using alt tab, let alone
again, yeah.
Win key tab? I mean, I keep this in mind because I work on serious stuff for work, and I'm seeing people buying stuff with Windows 8 and they just are like, what is going on? Like, I have stuff I need to do. And like, I don't want to play with Xbox Live music being downloads. Like, what the hell's.
Yeah.
And I don't really have an answer. Like, you're going to have to downgrade your computer. Like, this is just not going to work.
Wow.
And that's crazy that like a company as large as Microsoft can do this and think that they can shift this hard and not piss people off. Like, I mean, granted, there's the history in Microsoft is used to pissing people off, so maybe that's it. Maybe they just are in a special place where they think no matter what, they will still have users. I don't know. It's so hard for me to like kind of.
I mean, they might
understand.
You're going to buy your PC. It's going to have Windows 8, and what are you supposed to do about it exactly? Are you going to return it and then get what?
Well, no, you're used to Windows and your old shit's on Windows, so, you know, and you Macs, I mean, it's hard to even say if you're in the right income bracket to be buying Mac shit anyway.
Exactly.
So.
You are either screwed, and then there's strange stuff like Microsoft, you know, brags about the sale numbers. Well, you're bundling with the computer, so I don't even know. Yeah. What good does it do to say you sold 5 million Windows 8 licenses? Okay, does that mean it's doing well?
Does that mean it's even sold at all?
Right.
At all? Or does it mean that it's just in the retailer?
It wasn't on a computer.
But you know, irrespective of that, guys, it's going to sell at some point, yeah. Right?
Okay,
it has
sure.
to sell. It's not like people are going to say, oh, you know what? This sucks. Nobody's ever going to buy a Dell ever again. Like, no.
Well, it has to sell, which means they've made that money, but that doesn't mean that they've gotten those adoption numbers, which is what announcing numbers is supposed to say, is like, hey, look at me, let's go to our adoption.
How many people have access to the ability to downgrade their operating system?
Yeah. Zero.
Like, yeah. very few, like 1%, like, of all people who buy computers.
Right.
I mean, that's some next
level. Actually, that's not true, though, because a lot of Windows stuff is sold in the enterprise, and they always have access to downgrade. Because at enterprise level, there's always an IT department.
IT, but it's not like that's sometimes an option, I guess.
Well, unless the option, unless you're working at a CAD place where you're doing CAD all day, and the option is I cannot choose Windows 8 because of this thing does not support my CAD software.
Yeah.
Like, the only option is Windows 7, so all new hardware that's coming in has to be downgraded.
Yeah.
Right. Another thing is that I did install a ton of stuff, and it has a lot of compatibility issues still. I'm sure that'll get fixed out, just like it did with Vista and 7. But for whatever reason, it really does have a ton of compatibility issues. Like, it'll just bring up weird.
They've broken a lot of backwards compatibility on purpose.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's got to happen at some point.
Yeah, it's funny because Microsoft sort of has a cycle. Like, Windows XP was good, and Windows Vista was bad, and Windows 7 was good, and Windows 8 is bad. So it's interesting that we're continuing this little flip-flop a little bit. So
right. Windows 10 is going to be the shit?
Yeah, hopefully.
Okay.
I mean, here's the thing.
Windows 9, you meant to say, yeah.
No. But this is sort of a point of no return that I sort of feel like running things in full screen on the desktop PC. I mean, how do you go back from
Apple tried to do that.
When?
Apple has that right now. If I press F4 on my Mac...
Yeah, but it's not forced down your throat. That's just an option for you to full screen.
Well, you know, Sam, there's an option to have Windows 8 not boot into Metro.
I know what you're talking about. But, again, that's the same...
People don't know about that either.
But what still, have you tried it, though?
What?
Have you tried it?
No, because I can imagine what it would be. I get that. I get it. That's going to fix things, sort of, right? But
I don't know if it's going to fix things or not. You say it in a way that makes me think that you don't think things are going to be fixed. Your tone of voice. I don't know.
Okay, so let's say I try and search for something. I hit the Windows key and F, right, to find something on my computer.
Right.
Or I want to search in the control panel, or I want to search for an app. The default search is for it to search like files, not apps, not under control panel. Like, these are separate things. If I'm in the eBay app and I want to search for something, it'll usually default to bring up that side panel search thing.
Sure.
It jumps between stuff, and it's not clear like what it's searching at different times. This is hard to explain with how you guys like using it.
Yeah.
Or
no,
something.
I get a feel for what you're talking about.
What I'm saying is there's a lot of change, but I can't see any long-term benefit that comes out of it unless you're going to be using this on a tablet platform. When I'm talking about buying yourself a Surface Pro, I can't imagine there being too much of a problem using this on a Surface Pro. This is fantastic. I mean, it really is. Like, this is an interface that I totally get. If you guys have seen the keynotes of Ballmer and whoever else talking about Surface Pro,
I want to try it, dude. I want to try one.
Yeah, I mean,
Michael Dominic is going
to
get one.
Are we referring to the new Windows tablet, or is that just the new flavor of the OS?
Well, the current Windows tablets, the Surface that come with RT, those those are running ARM or whatever, so they supposedly can't run regular x86 and programs. Not to be confused with apps or programs. So,
but Surface Pro is running x86.
Right, so I don't know how. I guess it's going to run just a regular, I think an Intel i5 processor of some sort.
Yeah, it's going to run the i5, something like that. Yeah.
So, there's not tablets available with Pro on it yet, or
I think it's the end of this month they come out.
Gotcha.
And there's going to be a review on variable gigahertz.
Nice. All right.
That's going to be pretty awesome.
So
the interface, totally awesome for that. I mean, I completely get it. They've got it figured out really well for that.
But they're trying to ruin the desktop. And Apple's doing a better job of them, but Microsoft's copying Apple and doing a shitty-ass job.
I mean, no matter how much you sort of dumb it down, like, people still have work to do in the desktop. Like, people just stop working on the desktop just because
there's a new interface in town.
And frequent times when you're working on shit, you're like, oh, I need this on this side of the screen, and then I need to do this on this other side of the screen, and I need to go back and forth. And apparently that's painful in Windows 8.
Well, I mean, it's kind of... It's not impossible because you spend a lot of time in the desktop mode. But here's the problem. You know, people are used to hitting... At least I am. I'm used to hitting the start menu and then clicking computer, right, to bring up and... But the same as Windows E, basically. But again, that's like an advanced shortcut. Like, who hits Windows E besides us?
Yeah, right.
What percentage is it?
It's not 1%.
So you're going to hit the start menu, and then you're going to scroll around your apps and then be like, where is stuff? And it's the where is stuff that just slows you down. Like, how do you I asked myself one time, I was looking at this whole mess, and I'm like, how do I burn a CD in this interface? Like, where, how, where?
Yeah.
Like, how do I browse through what's on my computer? Like, there's just no way to do that with any ease. The whole thing, Ben, so awkward.
Well, I'm really looking forward to trying it, at least, because I have not had my hands on it.
This has intrigued me. Like, I'm, I want to know how bad any of this is. I think I'm going to upgrade the computer I'm on right now to Windows 8. Not now, but like as in...
How many nows?
Now? 5 minutes from now. I might want to try Windows 8. That's crazy. I'm like curious because the reviews, you know, haven't been spectacular, and I've only been browsing. I've been busy with all the normal shit I do, the 99% of my life, and then, you know, the 1% we hang out and talk about this cool shit, it makes me wonder, and now I'm actually like, this is curious to me. I'm wondering what it's all about and if it's really that bad. So I want to know.
I mean, I've thought maybe it's just me, and so I just decided to click Windows 8 reviews, and like there's a few pretty big ones, and they give it like 5 stars. And I'm like, really? So I like read through the review, and I don't know who's paying who, but
maybe they got like what, you know, the original Microsoft Surface. Maybe they got one of those out of the deal. I'd review the shit out of Microsoft if they gave me one of those.
I definitely would as well. America, I would really like you to give it
a shot and reconvene.
I mean,
well, you know what's funny? You know what pisses me off?
Drive and back it up, but,
about this a little bit is that we talked about Bing and taking the Bing challenge when Bing came out, and we never talked about the follow-up to that, which was none of you did it, and I took it. And I say I failed the Bing challenge.
You didn't, really, didn't it fail you multiple times?
It failed me multiple times. And maybe we did talk about it because I was trying to look for information, and it was right there in Google, but since I was in the middle of the challenge, I didn't look for it. Mm-hmm. And I didn't find the answer to my problem until I was off the challenge. And I was like, oh, that was the answer to that thing I was looking for.
Yeah. It's interesting that they set themselves up for that. Well, they set themselves up for failure all the time. So again, maybe Microsoft has some larger plan that I cannot even comprehend. Maybe Ubuntu is paying Microsoft to do this to drive users to Linux. Maybe that's what's
going
on. Or
there's the Ubuntu phone. Have you guys heard about that?
I did read some. You mean
the
running
Ubuntu phone?
Yeah, I did read about that.
It's announced. It's not going to ship, or it might ship at the late 2013, the end of 2013, but maybe not. And it's Ubuntu on your phone, and they have their whole own interface.
Oh, sorry. I didn't realize you were talking about them doing it. I just thought you were talking about someone loaded this shit on their phone. Yeah.
No, they are releasing an official version. Mm. And the cool thing is it's running native, so you'll get more performance on shittier, older phones.
Yeah.
So they might actually pick up a lot of old phones that are old stock Android phones that are sitting in the warehouse.
Yeah.
Those might end up being good for this software. But what's interesting is they have their whole own interface, their whole own gestures, and it's another touch thing for Sam to rant about. But once the phone comes out, we'll have to talk about it, Sam.
Yeah, I mean, you know, just tailoring whatever you're making for the form factor. You got to do that at some level, you know, tablet versus phone. I mean, desktop PC, you're using a mouse, like the gesture of let's say you're looking at modern, looking at all your cool tiles, and you click and drag from right to left. That would indicate that you want to swipe the tiles from right to left, the same as moving your finger from right to left, right?
Right,
so you
want
to take a look at your tiles. It doesn't treat it the same way. Like if you click a tile and drag it to the left, it will, you know, it'll move that tile around as though you had wanted to move the tile because your mouse is a precision instrument.
It's not a finger.
Right? But when you move your finger from left to right, it's like, oh, you want to move your stuff around. So
interesting.
And so, you know, if you're using your thing on a desktop, let's say I have a 23-inch or 25-inch monitor with a touchscreen, and I may want to, like, sometimes use the touchscreen, sometimes not. And that's actually what I do with the TX2500 because it's a resistive touchscreen. It's not that great, but use it sometimes, just whenever, to, like, move a window around or, like, click something on the taskbar, just something like that. That discrepancy on Windows 8 is really unclear. Like, it sometimes will slide stuff, but sometimes not, because the difference between your mouse and your finger. But it tries to combine those two in this really awkward way.
That's interesting.
Yeah, that will obviously lead to user frustration, right?
The whole thing is an exercise in frustration. Also, if you're doing any sort of remote access, like I have these days, I use LogMeIn in order to administer all the computers that I just end up working on. I'm like, I'm just going to install an instance of LogMeIn, and every time I need to come in the future, I just load it up that way. Saves a bunch of time. And the systems that have Windows 8, every time you have to hit the start menu to bring something up, that just sucks up a ton of bandwidth redrawing the whole screen with the cool little animations and stuff. I'm like, dude.
Yeah.
Interesting. I hadn't realized that, but the UI is really hitting you on remote management, which Macs have that a little bit too, but not as much, obviously.
Yeah, so, I mean, if Microsoft wants this interface in the enterprise somehow, I mean, we're just looking at a big problem, and I think the government, I think the military just signed like some huge billion-dollar deal with Microsoft to upgrade all their stuff to Windows 8.
God damn. I mean, and the government barely works right now. We're so fucked.
It's so awful. Ben, if you just put a thing in the show notes for me to get the link to that, I'll drop it in.
All right.
So I mean, I don't
it's
even...
It's so funny, now I'm distracted. While you were getting all angry, like, you guys realize that Skype is powered by Windows or Microsoft, right?
Yeah, it is now.
So,
which, by the way, I just spent, they did an upgrade, like I want to say 5 days, no, like a week or two ago or something. Yeah. I updated it, and then because I'm running 4.3.3, there's just no fucking memory. It just crashes almost every single...
That's
like
awesome.
The third time it crashes, I'm like, fucking Microsoft. And so I went through this big-ass effort to downgrade Skype down to the last version so that it would
you
actually...
just buy a better phone. Crash. I'm just saying.
Yeah, you know, I could, but then
well,
I can't.
Well, no, the four, even the base four is still a relevant smartphone. It's not like he's.
That's
it's not like his laptop or anything.
That's a good point.
I mean, it shouldn't be, but it is. But, you know, I don't want to deal with iOS 6.
So maybe this is what the thing is. So I have the Skype window open, and it tells me how many packets. By the way, my ping to Sam is 35 milliseconds.
Right.
And my ping to Merrick is like 27 milliseconds.
Dude, so we're doing pretty good.
The fucking – there's problems. It says problems under each of your guys' names. And right now it just flashed. Sam says problems. It says CPU underscore slow. And it says call BW underscore low, as in low bandwidth.
Wow, so that's cool.
Pretty funny. So Sam's getting all pissed on his slow CPU over there. And Microsoft's doing everything they can to slow him down even more. So he won't.
Dude, I wish I could like right-click a fucking picture of me and like have my problems menu come up, and I can see the whole list of issues I have and be like, oh shit, look at my ADD distraction level right now. That's just off the charts. I better fucking
way off the
that
charts.
Process down because I'm fucked.
You're on your PC, right?
Yeah.
Click call on Skype, click call and call technical info.
Yeah, I did it last time. I was kind of like, whoa, that's cool. I had no idea that was even, you know, something that you could easily find out. And
can you open it now? Actually, I want to take, I want to compare something.
I got it.
So, do you show UDP or UDP relay for me and Sam?
I show...
It says session out UDP or UDP relay.
It's UDP for both that. It's session in and session out.
Interesting. And what about to me and also to Sam? Because it's listed twice.
It says hot plug.
Oh, that's it? So it's just to me? Okay, so that means you're not connected to Sam at all. So I'm routing then.
One final thing, guys, just not to interrupt, but the desktop mode, is, you know, your regular Windows 7 computer, you have icons on the desktop, right?
Right, yeah. Right.
Those, for all intents and purposes, are shortcuts to apps. Same thing that has been since Windows 3.1, you know, shortcut to apps. So when you click live tiles, those are shortcuts to apps.
Right.
So over time using it, you end up with a lot of shortcuts on your desktop, a lot of shortcuts on your modern live tiles thing, and it's just like, what the fuck? Like, where is my program that I need to run? Oh, it's not on my live tiles, it's on my desktop. So you have this dual, weird app.
Can they go in both directions? Can you have a tile and a desktop? Can they switch or no?
Sort of. You can have a shortcut for a regular traditional program on your live tile screen.
Great. Okay.
But it doesn't, if it doesn't come supported for Windows 8, it'll just have like an awkward regular like Win32 icon.
Size icon.
With
right.
like a blank space. And what I did is one of the first things I did is enable all of the like advanced functions so that my whole start screen had all the regular stuff like shortcuts to the administration, you know what I mean, administrative controls.
Right.
You know, and a bunch of shortcuts programs like VLC, you know, and none of those have icons, so it just looks really awful. Like, it's trying to be all quick and slick, but it looks terrible.
That's horrible.
I mean, it looks fucking awful. I mean, you know, you can obviously expect that to change over time as they make a VLC app, I guess. But the whole thing just comes down to restricting what you're doing. You know, like being, using your computer, like dumbing it down to doing one thing at a time. And that comes at a strange time in computing history where people have multiple gigabytes of RAM and like 8-core processors. And I mean, this is like,
because people are getting so hot and bothered by tablets, is they like, this interface must work on PCs. It's this funny thing.
It's really funny. Let's use all 8 processing cores on my like FML app. Yes, there's an FML app.
Well, that's awesome. There may or may not be a Join Me app somewhere, somehow in the works that may or may not come out on the marketplace.
Okay.
Thank you. That's what
may,
I
may not download it.
You, I might kill you.
May or may not. Violence. May or may not happen.
Let me ask you a question. Why is it only for 5.1? Why did you decide to cut it off?
Join me. You're talking about Join Me, right?
Yes.
Because in order to so with iOS 6, mm-hmm. they changed the way the address book works, meaning you now have to ask the operating system for permission in order to get the address book.
That's probably a smart idea.
Well, yeah, because before you could just go for it without, like, a lot of things like GPS and taking a picture, or no, GPS and, yeah, taking a picture. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, you have to ask through the operating system, but address book was way different for some stupid reason. Mm. So they changed it, and in order to support that on iOS 6, which almost everybody's on iOS 6, right?
Yep.
We had to get the latest Xcode, which drops off 4.3.
Damn it.
Yeah.
God fucking damn it.
I know. So it's Apple's fault.
I still have your old copy of Join Me, which I'll still use.
No, dude. I can't.
Dude, I will. I will check it out.
It's so nice, dude. Yeah, it's awesome.
I promise. I will not scoff it off.
Yeah. So I was pissed when I found that out. I was just as pissed as you were. I was fucking yelling.
At some point,
you know, there's two perfectly reasonable explanations for that, and it's probably a combination of the two. But one is a technical reason, and the other is a business reason.
Yep.
So it's interesting to think about that and wonder, you know, how much of what it was.
Well, this goes back to Windows, because Windows hasn't dropped support for anything since Windows 3.1.
Which is pretty impressive. Even though
you can still run DOS shit.
Even though you upgrade to Windows 8, you can't find your programs. That shit is compatible. Forget about finding it or using it. At least
it'll run. Mostly though. But the thing is Windows 8, they broke compatibility a lot for the first time. They didn't ruin it, but they broke a lot of it.
They run. You just can't use it.
No. Sam, would you agree with me or do you agree with Merrick? As far as breaking compatibility.
Sort of both. Check it out. With Windows 7, they have something called Windows XP mode, which is just
and Windows 95. But it just changes the registry a little bit, and they have Windows 95 compatibility mode.
No. Windows XP mode is different because it actually runs like a VM of Windows XP.
Oh, right. So that was something they had, right?
Yeah, it's legitly like emulated Windows XP, and that makes sense.
How do you get that? Do you need to have professional or whatever?
Yeah, I think it's professional or business and above or something, but it doesn't work very well. Like when I realized what it was, that it was just basically running Windows Virtual PC or Microsoft Virtual PC, I was like, oh, I'll just run VirtualBox. Like, what the fuck is this about?
Yeah.
But it is built in there, and I don't think that's built into Windows 8. They just have regular compatibility mode and then the desktop mode.
But they've broken a lot of things, though, right? I mean, there's some things they're not supporting anymore. There must be.
Yeah, it feels like it. I'll run regular programs that work just fine on Windows 7 and Windows Vista and XP, and it'll just say something like, I don't know, it'll just return some fucked up error message like it's just not going to work. And I'm like, you know, user exception at 0xb, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, it's a hexadecimal.
See, this is a fun little case example between Microsoft and Apple, what you just heard about was Microsoft, and in Apple, you would upgrade, and then it's just magically gone, and you have no clue where it went, and you can try to find it, but you're not going to be able to. So at least they hide, in Apple, they hide the scary stuff from you, which is kind of nice and interesting to think about.
You know, see, the word kinda, it's kinda nice. I can't solve things when it hides it from me. I can't Google search for that hex address. I can't, there's nothing I can do. It's just gone.
You have no idea how much you can't do in Apple, but that's not the point. People aren't scared either, so.
Like, oh, I just can't do that. The end.
Yeah, it's gone.
You know, I've had a lot of networking issues recently where people just, can't connect to the wireless on their Macs anymore. All the PC ones are connected, but the Mac ones aren't. And I've discovered that changing the frequency on the router matters a lot, because I have some interference, I guess, from this startup that's underneath my office called Social Moms.
So you're telling me you didn't know about looking for Wi-Fi addresses and you haven't changed it till now?
What are you talking about, dude? I usually don't have to change the channel, but I...
Dude, I always look for the channel, especially when I go anywhere new. It's like, okay, what's the channel situation here?
Yeah, but this
you
is
always
you.
Have to know.
Sam, in your defense, I've never fucking even touched that shit.
Fuck you. Because, well, you live in the middle of the woods. You don't ever change your situation. You never move. So, fuck, your point is fucking irrelevant.
Erroneous. Erroneous.
It's erroneous.
Wow, Benjamin, you are fucking pissed.
Dude.
Sam, Social Moms.
Yes. So anyway, Social Moms, they installed this massive like cell phone tower type satellite internet thing on the roof. And ever since then, I was like, what is going on? So his laptops, I would ping the router 192.168.1.1, and my ping was anywhere from like 20 milliseconds to 1,000 milliseconds. I was like, this is a disaster.
Dude, you just gave out your IP address on the public internet, dude. Someone's going to hack into your shit now. You're fucked.
He did not give out any IP address.
Someone's going to hack into my local router's IP.
Oh my god. Sorry, continue, yeah.
So I'm like, wow, 1,000 millisecond, you know, pinging the router, this is a disaster. Right. So I kept changing it, and the best I could do was have it ping between like 10 and 50 milliseconds.
That's pretty good for wireless. That's pretty normal.
Dude, really?
You want me to ping? Okay, so I'm in the office right now. I'm going to ping my secret IP address that I don't know. Why is this not working? Anyways.
Social, Wi-Fi, satellite, interference, channel change.
Yeah. Anyway, so I picked one that was, you know, the lowest one or whatever. But just the other day, this dude, rookie lawyer, he goes, I can't connect to the Wi-Fi. And I'm like, dude, really? So, you know, I'm like, just give me this Mac. And I like open it up and I click connect and it asks for the password, you know, which is a problem because the password's already stored. So it shouldn't be asking for the password again. But I type it again. And, you know, in typical Apple mode, it just does a spinny thing and then just stops, asks for the password again. I'm like, dude. And I'm like, I cannot fix this. There's no error message. Like, go. You're going to have to go home. Like, this is not going to happen.
Just leave. Just never come here again.
And he's like, dude, it like never does this. Oh, and it's like, I can't even begin to fix that. There's no problem as far as the Mac is concerned.
Wow.
You know, how do you diagnose
another good Apple versus Microsoft moment? That's interesting.
Okay, I guess I'm wrong, Sam, because my ping is like 4 milliseconds.
Yeah, there we go. See, it should be four is what I'm talking about.
Well, it should be zero if you're LAN, okay.
Yeah, so, LAN, you're at one or less than one.
It's so funny because Windows is not accurate enough to measure those kind of timestamps, so.
That is true. But
so I'm at two and under one. A one, two, and under one on my wired. So I have two laptops here with wireless and wired and about 20 feet distance probably, so there you go. Anyways.
Legendary.
Well, I'm just giving you my data point. Continue on.
I think I'm done.
So what's wrong with the Macs then? You think that they just have
All I'm saying is I need more error messages or at least know how to go through the console logs or something to find out what the issue is.
So you think it's the antennas on the Macs or they're aluminum and the aluminum is vibrating with the fucking Social Mom thing or whatever the hell that was?
You know what? That might very well be.
I don't fucking know.
I don't know either. If we could just have some of our readers submit some of their favorite routers these days, because I'd like to...
Oh, the Belkin, there's a really good Belkin, but whatever. Or not Belkin, I'm sorry.
Max PC is usually on top of that shit, so if you check their best of the best section, it's not always super updated, but what they have under their best of the best section is usually of its respective era, as in, say, I don't know, 6 months ago, the best shit, period, because they do a pretty good job about reviewing the high-performance hardware. So, shout-out.
Excellent. Got to get something. I mean, reliability is the big thing, and it's kind of hard to come by these days.
Good talk.
I'm looking. Sorry for this podcast moment, but I'm looking for a router. Which there's no routers on this best of the best.
Just anecdotal. Jump back to what we were talking about. I just pinged Google, and I'm Wi-Fi to Comcast cable here in Santa Cruz, California, and my average was 19 milliseconds. So
You pinged out to Google?
Yeah.
You should ping your router.
Okay, I'll ping that shit.
That's what we care about.
I know. I wasn't paying attention.
You weren't paying attention. You, I don't know, bad person.
I don't know what my 1.0 will try to add.
He's figuring it out.
So it's not going to be 1.0.
1.1.
Or 0.1.
Yeah, 0.1, yeah.
Host unreachable. You don't say.
Sweet.
So Merrick doesn't know his own IP address.
Can
That's
you
good.
Do an IP config equivalent on the Mac?
Yeah, it's ifconfig.
Okay, do ifconfig, figure out the...
He's on PC.
I'm on the PC right now. But anyway, go on with... What were you looking at?
IP config then.
I was just looking at the article that you just told Sam to go look at for good routers, and there's no routers on that page, so...
That's which cool. reminds me, there's an article you guys might want to read written by Forbes called Microsoft is Fast Turning Into a Sideshow, which covers a lot of their business decisions.
Oh, I wonder, man. To Windows 8. There's a fucking next button at the bottom of that internet page, Ben. I don't know if you've used the internet before, but when you click on that, it goes to the next page of shit, and you can find out where the router is and what router they recommend.
Whoa, I like that. That's cool. I press next 4 times, you cocksucker. What are you telling me to do?
So wait, was it a single click, a double click, or how? What?
I pressed next as many goddamn times as I could press next. I didn't find a fucking router, so fuck you.
So wait. Talking about like a regular distribute the internets at your home Wi-Fi router.
On their maximum PC.
Best of the best section, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't find it.
Wow, damn. So, never mind.
That's right, but I did find the link of Microsoft's Fast Turning Into a Sideshow. And
yeah,
it's got a really funny picture
notes.
Of Ballmer on the front with a huge sweat stain.
There's a million bad pictures.
Yeah, but that one's pretty bad.
I put it in the docs. Take a look at it, Merrick.
Excellent fucking bad.
That's a pretty good in-depth article. One of the issues though is that, you know, a company like Microsoft, they have so many billions of dollars that, you know, shorting their stock is just something you can never do, even if you're so convinced that they're screwed. Like, after using that, for me, I'm convinced that Windows is really close
done
to being
done. Do you have any Microsoft stock or no?
No.
No. Shorting
them yet? I can't short it. I can't buy it. Like, I don't know what to do because they always – the second that there's any rumor of Ballmer getting out of the picture, I promise – that the stock will just shoot up like $1 billion, and then I'll just be bankrupted out of shorting them. I'll be like, oh, no, great. That's fucking great. So, and that guy's got to go eventually. Never mind.
So I'm 1 millisecond over Wi-Fi, which, like
that's
you
good
said.
Good job, man. Yeah.
Excellent. See, that's how it should be.
Yeah, pretty cool.
That is legitimate.
Wow, this has been such a good show. I don't know if there's any other thing we want to talk about.
Should we end it on a high note?
Yeah, unless you have a high note, I've been looking on iOS as far as, you know, coding all that fun stuff. And one of the things I realized, like I said, I just recently came up to speed on it, is that view controllers and understanding what view controllers are and how they stack on and how they work from code is, like, really huge for understanding the platform. Mm-hmm. And I wish I would have, like, done a little bit of, like, homework, like, just worked with a little bit of view controller like stuff in a little test project. I would have known so much more about how the whole operating system works, how the whole ecosystem works, and how to prevent a lot of crashes and all that fun stuff. So I don't know if that's a high note enough for you, Sam, but I mean that was something I was like, I'm so excited, I can't tell you, man. This app is making me hot and bothered, so.
Dude, fucking sexy.
Yeah, it is fucking sexy.
So maximum PC, best of the best. It turns out it's on page 3 is one Wi-Fi router. It's called the Asus RT N66U Dark Knight.
Oh, dude, that sounds epic. I had no idea that Asus even made routers.
They make one called a Dark Knight, and apparently this is the shiznit. So I'll just read the blurb real quick here. For the first time in a very long time, our best of the best pick in the wireless router category does not bear the Netgear brand. So Netgear was holding the crown for a while there.
Banished.
Asus's new RTN66U not only beat Netgear's WNDR 4500 in almost every benchmark, it also delivers more features, a better user interface, and more attractive industrial design. The RTN66U is a dual-band model capable of supporting 3 150 megabit second data streams simultaneously.
Whoa.
Holy shit.
So watch out for that crazy shit. Apparently, if you want to be Wi-Fi'd up, you better check out the Dark Knight and mount that shit in your fucking domicile.
Hot damn. That's really hard. Cool.
So they also pretty conveniently give you a little buy more, get more info at Best Buy, Newegg link. And I clicked through, and that thing is currently retailing for $157. So
that's
you know,
not bad.
That's bargain.
You got to spend more when you want the best of the best, but they call it that for a reason. So
I'm
going to
fucking buy that because I'm having fucking epic router woes in my house right now.
Really?
Yeah. It's totally not worth it. Get
Sam, let's fucking buy. Let's fucking get two of them and somehow get cheaper shipping or something fun like
let's
that.
Let's do it. you know, a lot of these routers, you know, I never like buy a brand new router, which I'm sure have really cool stuff. You know, you can download like torrents right through the admin panel and like, you know, just nifty stuff.
Wait, I don't think any router has that unless it's the WRTG custom Linux router.
Dude,
well, you can run your own firmware on a bunch of them, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but then there's no peer block. You're screwed.
Wait. Sam. Let's back up for a second. We're talking about forget running stuff downloading on the router. There is another option, which is running your own custom firmware, which I don't know if you're up to the task, but you have to get you have to buy hardware to do it. You can't just go, I'm gonna get some custom firmware. You have to buy the WRTG whatever 50 or whatever.
No. There's
only some of them that will let you
run it. The tomato router. You want to go for the tomato router project. That's a really good one.
Okay.
Here's another thing. So if you want to do a corporate setup, Sam, the other option is to use this BSD program called I forgot what it's called now. It's really, really cool. PFSense is what it's called. So it's a whole Linux operating system. So it's running off like a full PC, and you put network cards on it, and it'll let you do like, you know, where you have like the public like Wi-Fi and like the local Wi-Fi. So it's like a guest one for just internet, and then like a real one with a password for access to local files and stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So PFSense has really got all the features, but I don't think you want to administer that, right? So
probably nothing too hardcore. I'm thinking I'd rather administer something like the Dark Knight.
The Dark Knight.
Everybody wants the Dark Knight.
Oh my god.
That's pretty awesome.
Good times, dude. So let's buy that thing, dude.
Strong work. I'm glad we got the crew back together too for episode 27. So high five, you guys.
High five. Cool. Well, I think with that we're gonna say goodbye, but what you guys should do is you should go over to our website, which is portforwardpodcast.com, or follow me on Twitter. I'm at Benathon. Merrick or Sam?
Merrick is are you still at FastC4?
I am, and I even tweeted the other day.
Whoa, I tweeted back at you.
Oh, we should never also tweet either one of you fuckers.
We should also mention the Google Plus forum that I've become the recent admin of. It's called the Indie Devs group, I guess, on Google. And if you want to get an invite to that, just go ahead and mention me on Google Plus. My name is Ben Morse, and I will totally get you into that Indie Devs community. It's pretty sweet, right, Merrick? Well,
it's not like you need permission to join, but with our personal introduction, all of a sudden you are VIP.
That's very, very
true. Get some
true
red carpet treatment. Make it happen.
Oh, yes.
I am at Variable Gigahertz, GHZ.
Cool.
And you already cued the faded music, right, Ben?
Well, in the future, yeah.
Well, since it's playing, it's already the future for our listeners.
That's a good point, because this is not a live show. Unfortunately, we don't have a live stream running, but, you know, maybe someday we will.
We could pull it off, though. You know we could.
Oh, we know. He knows that Ben could pull it off. Thank you for your praise.
Not talking about you homo. I mean the interaction, the show. We are really capable of doing a live show.
Oh, you mean like talking back to people in the chat room and stuff like that?
God damn it. Like I'm going to challenge your technical ability. You were so...
No, I just don't want to do the work. Livestream sounds like a nuts fucking job.
I don't know.
I don't know. You want to run the chat room? If Sam wants to run the chat room from his CPU slow device over there... <it's...
laughs> Dude, fuck you. Tell you what, I'll use my iPhone as a server and we'll run it on there. It'll be really reliable.
Using awesome. Your Node.js and 400 lines, IRC. Dude, there you
if
go.
We wrote a fucking Node server to do anything, it could fucking rip on an iPhone. I swear.
Especially, especially if it was running fucking Ubuntu OS on another mobile phone. That would be sweet, dude.
That's it. Ubuntu versus Node showdown.
No, Ubuntu on Node on your phone versus, I don't know, something stupid.
Gotcha.
Versus Sam's PHP website.
Gotcha.
Okay, guys. Well, that's a good showdown.
Definitely.
We will talk to you hopefully soon. Maybe we'll podcast again soon. Who knows?
Sweet. We should try to do another one in 2013.
All right. Let's do another one in 2013. That sounds like a good move. All right. Cool, guys. I'll talk to you later. Bye.
See ya.
Okay, bye.
Beep. Good thing, Merrick, I think we can hold off on you uploading to me for now at least. We'll just try it. And
okay.
Feel free to delete the last show's audio if you want, because it's already been...
We'll forget about that.
Okay, so then, well, it's your CPU, it's your hard drive space, I don't care.
My spice tastes just fine.
Oh, God. It's disgusting. You're disgusting.
You know fucking websites that won't let you paste into the goddamn password field? Oh yeah, my god, good. The other day I was so pissed. I was like all on security, back up my life, like mindset. Like I just installed, subscribed to, what the fuck is it called? Crash Plan.
Because
I was looking for a cloud backup provider that would allow me to back up my WHS install because I have my fucking media on there. So turns out they're down with that shit and it's unlimited for $14 a month, 10 pretty computers, good. And I'm like, oh my god. So anyway.
Sold.
I don't even remember where the fuck it was. It wasn't their site. It was another site that I was using, and that ADD'd me to Crash Plan. What the fuck was it?
ADD'd you?
That's ADD'd me.
Can you use that?
GE Capital Bank, which I have a credit card through, their fucking website is one of them, and you just can't paste in there no matter what. And I was so mad because, of course, my old password was like 30 unrecognizable characters of nonsense generated by KeePass, and then I came up with a new fucking password, and it was, I was about to just say it. And
I love that shit. Do you have a podcasting client on your phone, Sam?
Not presently, but...
So download one right now. What's your problem?
I don't know, dude. I don't have a problem. Well, I mean, I do have a lot of problems, but which one should I use?
Podcaster. And there's one for your phone. Which one's great?
Podcaster. Okay. Mm-hmm.
It's like $3 or something.
Oh. Okay.
Oh, fuck yourself, dude.
Okay. Let's see what I can do.
Sam, did you see that thing?
Tahoe invite? No.
No. GitHub is having a party in San Francisco on the 17th.
Okay.
Isn't that cool?
Yes, that sounds pretty cool, I think. I don't understand how to use GitHub, dude. Either. Like, it's not something I find myself using, so hence my,
pause.
It doesn't
matter. Whatever.
I'm down.
Dude, the party could be social soccer mom's fucking office for all I care. If it's free alcohol, I'm going to go and I'm going to fucking drink and hang out and talk to people.
Right, exactly. That's what I'm saying. I'm thinking about the content, though. That's all. Thanks for the link here.